My mic.
Yeah, at least use the full name. We have a quorum. Mr. President, are you ready?
Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. Vice President. May I proceed to the floor?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Member of the Senate, one of the things that's so important to all of us, and I believe that the member of the Senate has that, is our integrity, and we say things that we believe to be true and correct, and sometimes we may say things that we went back and looked at them and it may not quite be exact. And I had an opportunity during the debate a little bit ago on Senate file or House Bill 137. I referred to my counsel, and I went back and looked at it. You know, I only get about two emails a day, and I wanted to just reiterate what that was said so there's no confusion between what I said and what actually was said when I referred to that. And, Mr. Vice President, what it was, and it was dealing with the House Bill 137, the concealed carry in public meetings, and I said about my city council members, two of them object to all firearms in a city council, whether it's open carry or concealed carry. Two of them had no opinion, and two had absolutely no objection to the bill the way it was written. I think I said that correctly. The mayor is lined up with a Second Amendment, and he supports that. But what he did say, if the council as a majority felt strongly about having local control, that he would not object to it. And I'm not sure if that's exactly how I said it, so I wanted to be sure that the Senate knew where I was coming from. Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Message from the House.
From the House of Representatives, February 24, 2017. Message number 387. Concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to House Bill number 56, Mobile Home Title Status Upon Permanent Foundation, Ayes 60. Message number 388. Concurrence passed. The House did concur on Senate amendments to House Bill number 152, Search and Rescue Operations, Ayes 60. Message number 390, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bill, House Bill number 40, Education Accountability, Ayes 58, Noes 2. The House did concur, message 391, on Senate amendments to the bill HB 156, Voluntary Commitment, Emergency Detention Amendments, Ayes 60. Message number 392, the House did concur on Senate amendments to House Bill number 275, Driver's Licenses Revisions, Ayes 58, Noes 2. Message number 389, concurrence failed. Mr. President, the House failed to concur on Senate amendments to House Bill number 231, Firearm Possession, Allow Felons Antique Firearms, Ayes 29, Noes 31. Message 396, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 231. The House conferees are Representative Burkhart, Chair, Representative Brown, and Representative McGuire. Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. President. We do have further messages. Yes. Message number 393, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, the House adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on House Bill number 78, Salvage Title Updates, by a vote of ayes 44, noes 16.
Oh-ho!
Message number 394, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, the House adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on House Bill number 192, Court Automation Fee 2, ayes 45, noes 15. Message number 395, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, the House adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on Senate file number 6, Radioactive Waste Storage Facilities Amendments, ayes 60. Message number 398, conferees appointed. Joint Conference Committee number 1, Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with like committee from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 14. House conferees are Representative Lindholm, Chair, Representative Barlow, Representative Lone. Mr. President, message number 397, Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 53. House conferees are Representative Eklund, Chair, Representative Blake, and Representative Clem. Message number 399, Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 62. House conferees are Representative Halverson, Chair, Representative Hallinan, and Representative McGuire. Message number 393, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, the House adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on House Bill 78, Salvage Title Updates. Ayes 44, noes 16. Message number 394, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, the House adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on House Bill number 192, Court Automation Fee. 2. Ayes 45, noes 15. Message number 395. Mr. President, the House adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on Senate File number 6, Radioactive Waste Storage Facilities Amendments. Ayes 60. Wendy Hardings, House Chief Clerk.
Did you say that one twice?
I think so.
I believe the reading clerk said that same one twice. That's because that conference committee did such a good job, we should reward them twice. Reports from standing committees.
February 24, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 8, to whom was referred House Bill 230, engrossed hemp farming, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Agar, Anderson, Baldwin, and Meyer. Excused, Senator Christensen. Senator Meyer, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 1, to whom was referred House Bill 238, engrossed nude image of a minor disseminated or possessed by a minor, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Kinski, acting chairman.
Third reading. House Bill 80, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 80, engrossed, Transportation Network Companies, sponsored by Representative Zwanitzer, an act relating to motor vehicles.
We do have a third reading amendment. Will the reading clerk please read that amendment in?
House Bill 80, third reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 18, after line 21.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 80. After a great lively discussion that we had about whether or not we should require or just provide that airports and TNCs can enter into agreements, I worked with my good colleagues from Teton County and Campbell County to come up with some language that would require some of our high frequency or busy airports to be required to come or to enter into these operating agreements. Looking at some of the two largest or busiest airports we have in Wyoming are in Jackson and Casper. And so looking at the enplanement numbers for those particular airports, we figured that a 90,000 annual enplanement would strike the right balance of making sure those airports had the operating agreements they'd like. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a great amendment, and I want to thank the sponsor for bringing it forward because there was a loophole left in the last amendment, and this takes care of it. So it's a great amendment. I hope the body votes for it.
Question.
Okay, we're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 80. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 80 has passed.
Thank you.
House Bill 80, having read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the House bill pass the Senate? Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Anselmi Dalton?
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Excused.
Excuse. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen excused. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Excused.
Landon?
Excused.
Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Excused.
Excused. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebeck?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Here.
No, aye.
So, Bouchard excused to aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 26 aye, 4 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 80 has passed the Senate. Senate House Joint Resolution number 2. Reading clerk, please read it in.
House Joint Resolution 2, Balanced Budget Amendment Resolution, sponsored by Representative Lindholm. A joint resolution petitioning Congress to call a convention to propose amendments to the Constitution of the United States to require a balanced federal budget.
There are amendments. Will the reading clerk please read in the first, third reading amendment?
House Joint Resolution 2, Third Reading Amendment Number 1, page 3, lines 6 through 12.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move Third Reading Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution 2 and ask the body's favorable consideration. Recognizing that over the past we had instances where we just accumulated large numbers of calls for conventions for various purposes that the particular legislatures that were sitting at any given time really had no idea were out there. Perhaps if we are going to move this legislation forward, it would be responsible for us to only bind the 64th legislature. So that's what this does. It says that this legislature has a call for a constitutional convention specific to the budget amendment, but that future legislatures are not bound by that decision that we make today. Consistent, actually, to some degree with the concept even of the budget amendment, which is an original concept that Thomas Jefferson provided, not allowing for national debt, based on the assumption that one legislature and one generation should not be binding future generations for important decisions and important considerations like debt. This does essentially that. It just makes sure that if this legislature wants to call for a constitutional convention, it does not necessarily mean that the next legislature does. I'd urge for the body's favorable consideration.
Further discussion, Senator Wasserberger.
And I think we know the issue here, and I don't want to belabor the balanced budget amendment and the constitutional convention or the Article 5 convention, but what essentially this does is we have right now 28 states that have sent forth a BBA amendment. If Wyoming passes this, it would be 29. I believe that Arizona has passed one through its House, and it is working through the Senate. If they pass it, it would be 30. And I would say that 30 is the threshold where Congress starts to get nervous and things start to happen in Washington because we need a 34 states to call the convention. And so essentially what this amendment does is if those four states left, or five, or six, or whatever it happens to be, we would have to come back down in January of 2019 and pass another BBA amendment. And so I would tell people, essentially, this is a great way to derail this resolution. And I would ask those who voted in favor of it to continue their support and to vote no on this amendment. And Mr. President, also, traditionally, when you do put a sunset on something like this, it's 10 years.
No reason.
Senator Case.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. You know, we're not binding future legislators. They can pass a rescinding amendment if they'd like. We did it before. The good senator from Sheridan pointed that out, that we rescinded all our former calls. There's a lot going to happen in the next 3, 4, 5, 10 years on this very issue. We should not give unqualified support. We should give we should not give qualified support. We should give unqualified support. I ask that you defeat the amendment. And if we change our minds, we're entitled, and we can do that. But this puts us with just our toes in the water. We need to jump in. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Senator Rossler, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President, for my second time. We certainly could rescind it moving forward, but what I would ask the body is, does anyone here know for sure how many calls for various constitutional amendments that we have out there right now? Maybe a couple of people in here know with certainty how many we have, but I would suspect that we probably don't know that because we don't look into it each year. We don't revisit everything that past legislatures have done to decide whether we still support them or want to overturn them. This type of a sunset is a healthy approach for this type of an amendment. I would urge the body to support it.
Okay, we're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to House Joint Resolution number 2. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no?
No.
That amendment has failed. Third reading amendment number 2 to House Joint Resolution 2. Reading clerk, please read it in.
House Joint Resolution 2, third reading amendment number 2, page 3, lines 6 through 12.
Senator Wasserberger.
Mr. President, I withdraw third reading amendment number 2.
Without objection, third reading amendment 2 has been withdrawn. House Joint Resolution number 2, having been read 3 separate times,
I'll talk to you about it later.
The question is, shall the House Joint Resolution... We have some discussion. Senator Peterson.
Mr. President, I hesitate to do this, but this is an important issue. We've got 2 or 3 senators that are not present. I'd ask for this bill to be laid back until next week.
What have we found the senators? Chris is gone.
3. Well, without objection, House Joint Resolution number 2 is laid back until Monday. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we have 2 Joint Conference Committee reports we'll vote on first. We want you to get the correct wording of what you're going to say next, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Okay. Senator Meyer, are you ready? On message number 253 to House Bill 78.
Yes, President, thank you.
Reading clerk, please read that in.
Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on House Bill 78, Salvage Title Updates, referencing Senate message number 253. Signed by Representatives Eklund, Lindholm, and Laux, Senators Meyer, Baldwin, and Case.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move... for concurrence on message number 253 to House Bill 78. Mr. President, we met with the House. We found out that the action that the Senate took in part of our amendment was necessarily problematic from the standpoint that it dealt with salvage titles on boats. We found out a salvage title has to have a 75% reduction in the value. The problem is, Mr. President, is that there's no way to determine what the value is on boats as it is for vehicles because they do not have like an NADA book or something like that or some published prices on boats. So it would be unworkable until we can determine how to determine the value of the boat to determine whether or not you could have a salvage title. So we rescinded from the Senate position in that regard, but had the House adopt the rest of the provisions that we had in the Senate amendments. And I would ask for the body's favorable concurrence, and I would ask you to vote yes.
Further discussion, Senator Coe.
Point of order. I believe the chairman moved for concurrence, and we're actually moving for adoption on this.
Point of order is correct. Would you remove Senator Meyer, please?
I would move for adoption of the concurrence report on message or conference report on message 253.
The motion is to adopt the Joint Conference Committee report being message number 253 to House Bill 78. If you vote aye, you've been asked to vote aye, and if you vote aye, you vote to adopt. Reading clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Downton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Excused.
Excused. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen excused. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski excused?
Excused.
Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas excused?
Excused.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasterberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 25 aye, 1 no, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to adopt the Joint Conference Committee report number, message number 253. To House Bill 78. Senator Ellis, are you ready?
Yes, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, please read in message number 290, which is a Joint Conference Committee report for House Bill 192.
Joint Conference Committee report number 1 for House Bill 192, Court Automation Fee 2, referencing Senate message number 290. Signed by Representatives Nicholas, Connolly and Eklund, Senators Ellis, Anselmi Downton, and Nethercott.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move adoption of Joint Conference Committee Report, Senate Message Number 290 to House Bill 192. This bill dealt with court automation fees, and the Senate adopted several amendments, but adopted several amendments to this bill. Initially, the House had concurred, but then they realized we were missing an enactment clause. So they undid their concurrence and inserted this language, which needs our approval. So on page 1, after line 3, we'll insert the language, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. This makes the bill constitutional, Mr. President, so I'd urge your adoption.
For the discussion, there being none, the motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1, message number 290 to House Bill 192. You've been asked to vote aye to adopt. Would the reading clerk please call the roll?
Agar?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Downton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard excused. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen excused. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski excused?
Excused.
Landon?
Excused.
Excused. Meyer?
Aye.
Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas excused?
Excused.
Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss? Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platen?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye.
Landon?
Landon? Excused to aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 26 aye, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1, Reference Message Number 290 to House Bill 192.
Mr. President?
Senator Burns?
I ask that you excuse the Appropriations Committee. Our Correspondent Committee is waiting for us to meet on interim topics. And in addition, I ask that you, when we go to the Committee of the Whole, that you lay back House Bill 58 until we come back.
Without objection, that's fine, Senator Burns. You're excused, and we'll lay back 58 till you get back. Do we have a quorum? I think we do, don't we? Sergeant at Arms? I believe we do. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business. Consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move this and resolve itself in Committee of the Whole for consideration of some of the, at least some of these House bills. Thank you.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Moniz.
I wonder if he wants his glasses.
I'll take them back. Thank you.
Look at the mess here. Okay, the Committee of the Whole will come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 11. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 11, Engrossed, Discounted Cash Flow Implementation Process, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, an act relating to the Department of Revenue, was referred to Committee Number 3, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinski, Peterson, and Wasserberger. Senator Peterson, Chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 11. And to explain the bill, I'll just go ahead and explain what the Revenue Committee has tried to accomplish with this bill. This is just basically requiring a study done by the Department of Revenue to look into the discounted cash flow valuation for oil and gas and then providing a report. And we'll talk about the dates and what this discounted cash flow actually means. But basically starting on page 1, line 11, it just says that this is the study trying to implement and use the discounted cash flow valuation for the ad valorem tax on oil and gas production, and then that's by 2020. On page 2, lines 4 through 6, it talks about the report on the additional cost to the department to administer the discounted cash flow. That's one of the areas that we wanted covered in the study. Romanette 2, on line 8, a determination of the tax impacts. That study, we want that to bring that out. And then Romanette 3, we talk a little bit about the other items such as price forecast, production forecast, operating expenses, and the discount rate on how those inputs would be determined. On line 20, we talk about the department consulting with industry representatives, local governments, the revenue departments of other states that have implemented such a a system, the discounted cash flow valuation for oil and gas production, and other interested stakeholders, and try to get as much possible information as they can from all the stakeholders involved. In line 6 on page 3, talking about the report, which include any recommendations for legislation to the Joint Revenue Interim Committee not later than November 30th, 2019, and then, of course, a study, an update study between then and 2019 that would be required not later than November 30th, 2017. Now, a little bit about what discounted cash flow is. We try to explain that a little bit in line 16 on page 3. Discounted cash flow is a method of valuing a reservoir of petroleum or natural gas using the concepts of the time value of money, where all future cash flows, both incoming and outgoing, are estimated and discounted by using the cost of capital to give their present values. Other states are using this system evaluation. It's working well. We just wanted to make sure that before we jumped, that we knew exactly how that would affect our revenue stream as well as the producers and all the stakeholders. The last page on page 4, section 2, we appropriate $10,000 from the general fund to the Department of Revenue. And, of course, that would be ending June 30th, 2020. And that would be used for the conducting of the study and the work involved and, of course, hiring consultants as needed. And then, of course, Section 3 of this Act is effective immediately upon the completion of all that we need to do here. So that's the bill. It's the bill to bring forth a study from the Department of Revenue to look into this new valuation process for our ad valorem tax revenue stream. And I'd stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. Are there any questions? Senator Case.
Chairman, I rise in favor of this proposal. Kind of the way discounted cash flow works is that, if you are in business and you have an asset and the asset produces returns over time, you try to come up with a value for that asset as it would be right now. So you look at the revenue or the net revenue that might occur in the future years. It might be 10 years off. And then you have to discount that revenue figure back to the present. But it gives you a value now, and usually discounting is based on some impression of what the real rate of interest would be, so you'd have to come up with an interest rate in the calculation. But what it does is take a bunch of future years of revenue and bring them all together and value it as if you're going to do it right now. It's often used when your businesses are purchased, and it's appropriate in the property tax area because it gives a value for the field, and it's a different way than we do it now. The advantage could be that it avoids all the changes in valuation that have to occur when prices change in these market industries. So it's worth looking at, and that's all this bill does. I hope you'll support it.
Microphone. All those in favor of Senator Peters' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 11, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 11 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our...
Mr. Chairman?
Senator...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a majority of us. May I have privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
Thank you. Members, we're down to about 18 on the floor right now, so please be very careful as you take messages or if you go off the floor to get a drink or anything. We've got to have 15. We've got to have 15 on the floor. 16. We have to have 16 on the floor, so at any given time. So only two people can be off the floor at any time, so please just watch that. Otherwise, we'll be shut down until somebody returns. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. The next bill is House Bill 15. Would the reading clerk please read the bill? Patents down.
House Bill 15, Sex Offender Registration Fees and Penalties, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to sex offender registration. was referred to committee number one, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hicks?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report, that it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 15 do pass, and for an explanation of the bill, I would ask that you call on Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senators, you have before you House Bill 15, which relates to the collection of fees for sex offenders. The origination of this bill comes from the costs associated with tracking sex offenders in the state of Wyoming. So historically, about 7 to 8 years ago, law enforcement reached out to the Attorney General's office and asked for assistance in providing software and in tracking and sex offenders within our state pursuant to the registry requirements that we have. So the Attorney General's office, at their request, secured some federal funds to obtain a statewide software program in order to monitor and track these sex offenders within our state. Unfortunately, the Department of Justice will no longer fund that grant program, and so that cost for the software and the maintenance of it now falls upon the state. And so this particular bill actually requires a fee now to be assessed to those sex offenders. So if we just go ahead and look at the bill, the onus starts on page 3. Right? I'm glad you are. So really important points, I'm just going to highlight through the bill and then stand for questions. So starting on page 3, line 7, so this is at the time of initial registration, so after a person has been convicted and they have to go register, which does not include times of incarceration. So if they've been sentenced to prison or they're currently in jail, this doesn't apply. It's upon their release and upon the time of initial registration, they have to pay a one-time fee of $120. They also then have to pay a county registration fee in an amount equal to 25% of the state registration fee. So a fairly small fee, and it's a one-time fee at that initial time. Then if we look down at subparagraph 2, as an offender moves and has to re-report, they have to additionally pay an additional fee of not to exceed $25, so a very small fee there associated with that, and again, the same comparative fee for the county.
Mm-hmm.
What's really important here in this bill, and what I particularly like about it, is then the next paragraph, Romanet 3, which states that the state registration and reporting fees established by the division shall, to the extent practicable, generate a total revenue that approximates but does not exceed the direct and indirect cost of administering and enforcing the provisions of this act. So this is not a money-making program for the state. For these offenders, it really is intended to only be directed at the costs associated with maintaining the system as required by law. So I think that's a really great safeguard so that these fees don't become too high. Additionally, as we look down to the remainder of this bill, it also allows for an indigent offender to apply for that indigent status to offset those fees or to have those fees be zero. So in the event that there's an offender who simply just can't afford to pay it, that they're not receive any kind of punitive results as a consequence of not being able to pay. So for that, I will stand for questions and ask for your favorable consideration of House Bill 15.
Thank you. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand this program, we're charging now a fee for the registration of sex offender, and that registration is required as a result of their conviction. It's one of the penalties that an offender gets for being convicted of this act. And it's not an optional thing. They have to register. Mr. Chairman, I would like, it is a piling on here. I would like somebody to explain to me why this isn't an ex post facto law in violation of the U.S. Constitution, and why this additional fine that we're charging here, which is what it is, does not have to go into the common school fund.
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Great question regarding the ex post facto concept as applied to sex offenders. The U.S. Supreme Court has clearly ruled on this particular issue as applied to the registration status as a whole, that the application of requiring convicted sex offenders to be on a registry and pay fees associated with it is not considered ex post facto. It's actually in the civil realm rather than the criminal realm. Whether you agree with that decision, it is the law of the land based on the U.S. Supreme Court decision regarding this particular issue. Again, I want to keep in mind regarding your question, because from the good senator's question regarding fees going into the general fund, these aren't fees generated for any kind of operations only for the system itself as related to the sex offender. So the cost of this program, since the DOJ is no longer paying through the grant, would be about $1.5 million that the state would then have to front if we didn't transition these costs back to the offenders themselves, who are responsible essentially for being subject to this act. So I think this fee is appropriately placed with them. Again, as mentioned, there's a number of procedural safeguards. So it's intended not to be this punitive and overburdensome particular fee for sex offenders. And I think it's a great solution for the state to continue to maintain compliance with the law as it regarding sex offender registration and not being too burdensome on the offenders themselves.
Another question being called. All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion on the Committee of Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 15, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the House Bill 15 has passed Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for our consideration is House Bill 62. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 62, engrossed, Immunity for Drug Overdose Reporting, sponsored by Representative Pelkey, an act related to controlled substances, was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 62 do pass. There was no standing committee amendment, and to explain this good little House bill, I yield to Senator Case.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill is an attempt to address a very significant problem that we have in Wyoming, and it's hard to believe, but since 2005, during the period 2005 to 2014, 279 people died of drug overdose in Wyoming. That's an astounding number. That's bigger than the amount of people in many of our small, tiny towns. It's more than the number of people in Hudson, for example, that's in my district. I just find it phenomenal. What this bill does, Mr. Chairman, is try to save lives. And the way that it tries to save lives is to grant immunity to someone that either is experiencing a drug overdose or is reporting a drug overdose and is part of that situation. And there's very specific conditions in the bill, but that's what it does, Mr. Chairman. And it grants a very limited immunity with respect to specific crimes, one of which is possession, and the other one is use, Mr. Chairman. So what it really is trying to do is to encourage people to, when this situation develops, that they seek help immediately and they stay involved in the situation to, for example, if there are two friends, one experiences, goes into a drug overdose, it provides immunity for both of them, Mr. Chairman, and especially encourages the person that's with that person to stay involved, to be able to tell medical and police authorities what happened, what the substance was, and these lives can be saved because there's specific medical procedures, but most importantly there's a medication that blocks the impact of opioids that can be administered and provide save a life. So if the ambulance is rolling up to someone that's left abandoned, they don't know what's happened to them. They don't know whether they need to administer this particular medication or not. They might think it's a heart attack. They might think, who knows what they'll think. But if the person is there and knows they have immunity and be able to say they took heroin, they're on prescription Oxycontin, and they've taken all their pills, whatever it is, we could save lives. Because it's really not about a trafficking or sale
or thing. It's about a situation where people are using drugs and are addicted to drugs. And so here's the bill. It's an act relating to controlled substances, providing immunity from prosecution of specific offenses. Mr. President, page 2, here's the bill. Notwithstanding any other provision of law, a person who in good faith seeks medical assistance for himself or another person is immune from criminal prosecution for an offense listed in subsection C of this section. Subsection C, Mr. Chairman, is possession and use of a controlled substance only, not sales, not whatever the different laws are. It's just possession or use. So you get immunity if that person reasonably believes he or another person is experiencing a drug overdose event. Second, the person provides a functional description of the actual location of the drug overdose event, and the person remains at the scene of the drug overdose event until a responding law enforcement officer or emergency medical service provider arrives, or the person remains at the medical care facility where the person experiencing the drug overdose event is located until a responding law enforcement officer arrives. Romanet 4, the person cooperates with the responding law enforcement officer, emergency medical service provider, or medical care provider, including by providing information about the person experiencing the drug overdose event and the type, this is very important, of substance that may have caused the drug overdose event. And finally, the offense listed in subsection C of this section arises in the same course of events as the drug overdose. So in the same course, they are in possession and use is the crimes they're going to be charged with. Not sale. This is not someone selling drugs. Let's be clear about that. Part B there talks about possession and use, as I mentioned, or I'm sorry, I've got that wrong. The immunity from prosecution under subsection A of this section shall extend to the person experiencing the drug overdose event if all the conditions specified in subsection A of this section are satisfied. All right, here's what happens. You got two people, they're taking drugs. Maybe one's taking drugs and one's not. One overdoses, Mr. Chairman, and the person that's not taking the drugs, or at least not overdosing, Mr. Chairman, it's a terrible situation when this happens. They call and they claim the immunity and they report the drug overdose to try to save the other person's life. So the immunity extends not just to the person making the call, but the person actually experiencing the drug overdose. And that's a good idea, Mr. Chairman, because you could have people that one person's not going to call in the drug overdose event because they're worried that the person that's experiencing the drug overdose will get arrested. It may seem like mixed, when your mind's all mixed up at that point in time, you all sorts of things could happen. So, I hope Charlie makes it because if I call him in, they're going to arrest him, and I don't want that to happen. So, anyway, it's crazy, Mr. Chairman, but we need this. So finally, in D, as used in this section, we've got the definitions. On page 4, line 2, it talks about what a drug overdose event is. Line 10 is very important. It says good faith. Good faith does not include seeking medical assistance or immunity under this section as a result of using a controlled substance during the course of a law enforcement agency's execution of a search warrant, arrest warrants, or other lawful search or warrant. So the cops can't come running in, Mr. Chairman, and you go, whoa, drug overdose and immunity. You can conceive of all sorts of things happening. So finally, the disqualifiers, Mr. Chairman, line 16. Nothing in this section shall be interpreted to prohibit the criminal prosecution of a person for an offense other than the offenses listed, which is possession and use, Mr. Chairman, possession and use only. Second qualifier, limit the authority of law enforcement officer to obtain or use evidence obtained from a report, recording, or other statement provided by a person seeking medical assistance for himself or another person under this section to investigate and prosecute an offense other than the offense listed in subsection C. And the only other amendments are just it's a new piece of the Act, so the Act definition is extended. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman. 279 people in a very short amount of time, and we have a very bad epidemic of use of painkillers and even heroin, Mr. Chairman, and this is going to save some lives. It could save some lives. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Case. Questions for Senator Case? Questions on the bill? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman and members of the body, this is a bill that the Judiciary Committee looked at in the interim. Failed the bill, did not come back, and I'll try to explain why. I think my colleague from Fremont County talks about the good things that could happen with this, but let's talk about the bad things that could happen with this. Number one, if you have a drug overdose and your buddies won't call to save your life right now for emergency services, maybe they're not very good buddies to begin with. But here's the problem with this, is if you read the bill, it gives anybody immunity that was actually in the act of using a controlled substance that's a violation of law now because they called and they said, look, I have a friend, he's having an overdose right now. If I hang around, they come up, the ambulance, then I'm immune for prosecution of the law. And there was some concerns that this potentially could be used as a loophole in some cases to avoid prosecution under the use of controlled substances. I just tell you, there's a lot more here than what it looks like on the surface. And you know, just for edification, we'll have another reading here, and if it moves forward, I'm sure we'll have some discussions on some second reading amendments. But this is something that we worked in the interim, and the committee didn't feel like was merited to come out on the floor again. I don't know whether it will or won't save lives. I think that's a noble cause. If it does, it's a good thing. But it also offers immunity for people that were actively involved in breaking the laws of the state of Wyoming a get-out-of-jail card.
Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that this body has historically been very concerned about police authority and the usage thereof and the proper application of their discretion, and so I'd urge the body's careful consideration on page 4, lines 22, Romanet 2, about what that really means and potentially the efficacy of the entire bill itself when this particular provision is applied. So recognizing that this potentially allows law enforcement to ask questions of those individuals suffering from drug overdoses and committing crimes, really unlimited questioning, potentially to search that house, do additional law enforcement investigation duties under this particular circumstance. So I would just urge the bringer of the bill caution regarding the carte blanche authority there given to law enforcement when a crime is being committed by individuals who are under the influence and potentially dying. In addition, I just would also give great caution on page 2, line 3, that an individual can call on themselves if they feel like they're dying and be then immune from prosecution and just how this can really be abused. I appreciate this bill's intent. I think it has great merit. This is something actually going on in community colleges, too, and universities across the country to provide immunity. So students also report when their classmates may be overdosing from either alcohol or drugs, and that works very well, that amnesty that's provided in those college campuses. So I think this bill is great, but I do think that there are some unintended consequences that we need to work through as this bill moves through the body. Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with the senator from the Little Snake River Valley over there that it's a noble cause to try to save lives, 287 or whatever we heard. But I question how these individuals are going to know that in February 2017 we passed a bill to make them immune. I can't figure out how they would all know that so they could all call and all do the noble thing. So maybe if the maker could expound upon that a little bit of how we're going to get the word out to everybody who's going to overdose that they are immune.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, really, really think that the intent of the bill is good. And I'd like to have the sponsor answer one question. What I see this bill doing, we're giving immunity to
people that are breaking the law. And to me, that's a problem. And I would love to have the sponsor maybe explain that to me.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me see if it came through our committee. Let me see if I can explain it from my point of view. First, you've got to understand that what we're talking about is immunity from misdemeanor offenses. And we don't give death penalties to misdemeanor offenses. And these things, you get an overdose either from heroin or from some of the opiate drugs that where we're having an epidemic of abuse in the state currently, you can be dead in a very short order of time. You need help right now. So we think that on balance, Mr. Chairman, that we're better off taking a chance and saving the lives of the individuals involved and the near-death experience of the overdose is plenty of penalty. That if anything will scare them to not doing that sort of thing, that might. Mr. Chairman, I suppose it depends a little on your point of view. If you take a very Darwinian point of view, survival of the fittest, people that are dumb enough to do that sort of thing, if it kills them, so what? Species is better off. The gene pool is improving. Then I suppose you should oppose the concept here. If you take the point of view that every life is valuable and these people, you can save them, they're capable of becoming more mature, they're capable of reforming, then, Mr. Chairman, this bill is a good thing. Now, if there's some technical problems in the legal area and the criminal investigation, Mr. Chairman, we ought to deal with those on second reading. Those did not arise in our committee. We're more used to dealing with the medical issues involved here than we are some of the legal technicalities in Committee 10. So for those reasons, I would urge us to bring the bill forward to second reading, Committee of the Whole, because the penalty for failure to get the emergency response there in a hurry is very severe and very final, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions on House? Senator Von Fletterer.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing I would say in regards to giving somebody immunity for a crime in the course of committing a crime is I would say that if we took that right away from our police, what they would call their snitches, I think we'd probably lose a lot of intelligence that comes from their information they give to the police. So that would be an example.
Further questions? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just wanted to point out to you, when we go to page 3 of the bill, and you go down to line 17, and it talks about what the controlled substances are. So we're dealing with the, in one case, and here's my concern. It says you get in down to page 3, you get into the 20, and under the Wyoming Controlled Substance Act, if you go that, then it lists as under that Wyoming Substance Control Act, Schedule 1, Schedule 2, and Schedule 3. We're not talking about just a little bit of marijuana here. We're talking about narcotics. We're talking about opioids. We're talking about hash. We're talking about some pretty freaking hard drugs here. Now, this isn't something that I think that we ought to be giving people immunity for. Now, I understand the provision if somebody overdoses. But just because you called somebody and you waited around, I don't think if you've been using those drugs, it is a clear violation of the law. And again, this is not just recreational marijuana. This is some pretty severe stuff under Schedules 2 and 3. It's a policy question, but I'll tell you what, it's a big one. whether you want to give immunity for pretty severe drug use.
Senator Agar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly respect the what the bill is trying to accomplish. My simple question is, growing up, a neighbor kid died from a drug overdose. There was two other people in the room, and they were so wasted that they didn't realize till the next morning that he was even dead. So is this bill going to accomplish what we're trying to do?
Senator Case.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this gives immunity to persons that are breaking the law, but the law with respect to possession and use. These aren't people that are being selling drugs, Mr. Chairman. They're not perpetrating the horrible thing, but they are using it, and they are in possession of it. And, Mr. Chairman, that is against the law. And I make no bones about it. I think in my introduction I said we're talking about heroin. We're talking about opioids. We're talking about the most dangerous drugs that we possess. And I never said this was about marijuana. Mr. Chairman, you know, it's a choice to make. I suppose there will definitely be those times when everybody's wasted and nobody figures it out. What a tragedy. This whole thing is a tragedy. These are addicts. No one takes that much stuff unless you're an addict. And that is a sickness. And actually, you know, I could talk about whether we should be jailing those people at all. That's another discussion we could have. But this says, in the chance that we can save a life, and they cooperate with law enforcement in all these other ways, let's do it. And yes, I do have the civil liberty concern that the fine new senator from Laramie County pointed out, that the officer can go ahead and obtain evidence from the crime scene and use it in other ways. Sure, but that is a trade-off. I think this bill will save lives. I don't think it'll save all the lives. There'll be many missed opportunities, but it will save some lives. And how will the word get out? I don't know. I'll tell you, folks on the street are pretty smart. Word gets out, they figure it out, and it will happen. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 62, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, privilege
of the floor. Senator Kinski, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I wish...
Can you read that past the Committee of the Whole?
I thought it did. House Bill 62 has passed Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor, please.
Go ahead.
My apologies to the body for the inconvenience. Myself and Senator Pappas had a long-standing invitation to speak to a group, and in our hustle to get out of here, we failed to catch that it was a 12:30 reconvening, so we went from being happily thinking we were an hour ahead of schedule to being an hour behind. Senator Pappas feels bad enough that he's offered an open bar for everybody. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Kinski and Senator Pappas. With that, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along those lines, for those of us who don't drink, cash is certainly welcome as well.
Thank you. Any more comments for Senator Pappas before we move forward? The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 130. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 130, engrossed, Harvest of Trophy Game and Fur-Bearing Animals, sponsored by Representative Lindholm, an act relating to game and fish, was referred to Committee No. 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 130 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd like to have that read in, please.
House Bill 130, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 19.
Mr. Chairman, could we vote on it? The amendment is to change the effective date of the bill, and I would call for the question on that.
Could we? Would you like to move the bill, Senator Emmerich? It was read in, but I don't know that it was.
I'd like to move that standing committee amendment, Mr. Chairman.
You've heard the reading. Heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. There was an enthusiastic aye there, Senator Emmerich.
Wait till you hear the bill, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill that goes into Demon Fish Law 21703, limitation numbers of big game and trophy animal licensures, and it merely adds two sentences. The commission shall determine the allocation of resident and non-resident mountain lion harvest. Then comes down to line 16 and adds mountain lions and bobcats by residents and non-residents. The situation, Mr. Chairman, is in the northwest corner of the state. There are a number of very enthusiastic out-of-state mountain lion hunters, as well as enthusiastic resident mountain lion hunters. And in an attempt to prevent overcrowding, where 10 or 12 non-residents and 14 packs of dogs, they come in, buy one license, and run all over the Bear Lodge area. This is merely to have the Game and Fish regulate mountain lion licenses to quota of harvest instead of number of licenses. They think that by doing this, they can get to more of these trouble cats that kill livestock by the houndsmen that work in that part of the country, and to try to spread the number of people chasing mountain lions. Not that there is a problem with the number of lions, it's just where the lions are pushed by some of the out-of-state hunters and the troubled cats are not able to be dealt with. So they want to regulate the mountain lion harvest by numbers and quotas instead of by licenses. That essentially is the bill, Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Emmerich. Any questions? Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question. There's a Bear Lodge area over in the northeast corner of the state. I wondered if there was another one in the northwest, as was stated.
Senator Emmerich.
Mr. Chairman, I misspoke. Bear Lodge is indeed in the northeast corner of the state.
Further questions? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 130, please say aye.
But I know you would want to tell him.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 130 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 153. Would the reading clerk read the bill?
Boy, there's some interest in this one.
House Bill 153, Parental Rights, sponsored by Representative Jennings, an act relating to parents, was referred to Committee Number 1, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Hicks, and Kinski. No, Senator Anselmi Dalton. Excused, Senator Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation on HB 153, do pass. And I will be presenting the bill today, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, this bill comes about to try and clarify a bit of confusion arising out of a U.S. Supreme Court decision regarding parental rights. It's a short, simple bill that gives some additional protection to families concerned about their rights as parents. It's been longstanding jurisprudence in the United States that the right of a parent to raise their child is a fundamental right. That's been at least since the 1920s in a series of decisions, Pierce versus Society of Sisters and Meyer versus Nebraska, wherein the Supreme Court said your right as a parent to raise your child is a fundamental right. In a series of additional cases down through the years, it has always been held that a fundamental, anything that infringes on a fundamental right, any state action that infringes on a fundamental right is subject to review by a court under the strict scrutiny standard, and the burden is on the state to show that if they have a compelling state interest, that it is being undertaken by the least restrictive means. And that was the state of the law until 2000, when a decision went to the Supreme Court, the Troxell decision. And the Troxell decision is notable for creating confusion in what it had until that point been an area of black letter law. This was a decision, this was a case regarding a Washington State visitation statute wherein a court awarded visitation to, I believe it was a grandparent, over the objection of the parent. And it went to the U.S. Supreme, the state Supreme Court, and ultimately to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the law was struck down, but it was the way the opinion was written that has engendered so much confusion about the state of the constitutional protection afforded parents. It was a plurality opinion, so there's a multiple number of opinions. We've all seen that come out of the Supreme Court before. The plurality opinion by Justice O'Connor did refer to the right of a parent to raise their child as being a fundamental right, but at no point did they ever refer to a strict scrutiny standard. And in fact, the plurality opinion specifically said of parents' rights that they are accorded, quote, some special weight, a standard considerably below that which had been accorded to parents' rights previous to that. The other opinions, with one exception, made no reference to the strict scrutiny standard. The only reference to strict scrutiny was Justice Thomas, who noted the lack of application of a strict scrutiny standard in the other opinions in that case. As a consequence, there have been some states that have backed away not from the fundamental right aspect of a parent's right to raise their parents, but they have backed away from the strict scrutiny standard. In particular, we can look to Maine, where the Maine court stated that a parent's decision is given a presumption of validity, and that is all that the Troxell case from the U.S. Supreme Court requires. And that is all it requires, a substantial backing away from the strict scrutiny standard. Another situation in North Dakota, where the court said it is obligated to accord some special weight to a parent's determination, but it did not apply a strict scrutiny standard, again, as a consequence of the confusion caused by the Troxell case. In Missouri, in Cannon v. Cannon, the court stated specifically, in citing Troxell, that a parent's interest in his or her children is entitled to heightened protection, but it is not entitled to strict scrutiny. Now, is this all courts or a majority of the courts? No. Has it happened in Wyoming yet? Some believe that there is some backing away in Wyoming. I don't tend to agree with that. But the purpose of the statute is to prevent that from happening. It's to take out some additional protection by taking what had been black letter law arising out of longstanding Supreme Court decisions and incorporating it into statute so that our Supreme Court knows strict scrutiny is the law of the land under Wyoming law, and that the Troxell weakening or casting doubt upon the strict scrutiny standard is not what the law of the land is to be in Wyoming. So HB 153 heads off any weakening of the strict scrutiny protection, heads it off at the pass. So very quickly, the bill, on page 1, lines 12 through 14, states the liberty of a parent to direct the upbringing, education, and care of the parent's child is a fundamental right. And on page 2, lines 2 through 7, simply states the state, agency, or political subdivision shall not infringe a parental right without demonstrating the interest of the government as applied to the parent is a compelling state interest addressed by the least restrictive means. 9 through 15 talks about it applying to statutes implemented before or after this. And then lines 17 through 18 makes clear that it will not apply to a parent whose parental rights have been judicially terminated. I have heard some concern from some of my peers that this might be used to cause mayhem within the classroom. The national organization with whom I've spoke that is championing this said that it's clear from cases like Fields versus Palmdale that the Meyer-Pierce doctrine of the parents' rights as a fundamental right, that this statute would not extend to second-guessing curriculum within the school classroom. With that, I'd urge your favorable consideration of HB 153. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. This bill certainly is perplexing, unusual, and based on an inappropriate review of U.S. Supreme Court case, it has always been the law of this country and of this state that a parent has a fundamental right to their children and their upbringing. It has never been any different. And the Troxell case, which you've been referred to, that has created such hysteria across the country regarding parental rights and the government's ability to interfere with those rights, is completely misapplied. As you heard the good senator from Sheridan say, that was a grandparents' visitation rights case. It had absolutely nothing to do with government action, which is why there was not a mention of strict scrutiny. Because strict scrutiny only applies when there is government action. In the Troxell case, there was none. It was a dispute between grandparents and an ex-daughter-in-law over visitation rights of those children. And the law regarding visitation rights with children in custody matters, both grandparents and otherwise, involves a balancing of interests for the best interests of the child. So even when a parent wants to see their kid every single day, sometimes the court says, you're going to split that time up between the parents, even though you want this to look differently. Sometimes the court says it's in the best interest of the child to see grandma and grandpa on Saturdays. This has nothing to do with government action interfering with parental rights. This legislation, I'm very disappointed in how this has affected the country and affected the good families of our state, because it's created so much fear that truly is unfounded. I do fear about the unintended consequences of this law. I am deeply concerned about truly the application of subparagraph C as well as B. It doesn't even properly state the strict scrutiny standard that has been the law of the land for the country and the state since the beginning of time. I understand the fear and the concern that it's created. It's just unwarranted, and it's deeply concerning. I've gone to the website. I've seen the big red Donate Now button, and I just have legitimate concern about the authentic need for this legislation when it has never looked any differently in this state and, frankly, the country.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to this bill,
as I place it and look at it, well, I come at it from a little bit different direction. And although I'd like to echo the comments of the good senator from Cheyenne here, that the same thing. I had a number of people talk to me. They referred to me, and I went to their website. I was referred to their website by individuals who were wanting me to put this up on the board so it would be considered. And the stepchild was on the front page of the website was a case called Fields versus Palmdale School District. This is after Troxell. It's in the Ninth Circuit, which, as we all know, Ninth Circuit being California, is not a bastion of conservative politics. But as they, but as I got to tell you, as I reviewed the case, I think they got it exactly right. And so, you know, it just goes straight, you know, a broken watch can be right twice a day, Mr. Chairman. And but I'll just read a couple quotes out of this to illustrate the point. The and what's going what happened in Palmdale was we had this debate a year ago. If you remember that, we had a debate as the budget bill that the risky habits survey that was being circulated among school kids, young school kids, and we cut the funding on it because it was asking questions about stuff. Most of them didn't even know what it was, or gave them a chance to brag about what they probably didn't know what they didn't know what to talk about. If they did, they were probably bragging about it. Well, they sent home something that was a similar survey that asked a bunch of silly questions. I can share with you a couple of those questions are, I wouldn't want my kid to take this. So this is, keep in mind, this is first, third, and fifth grade. These are questions, a survey that a researcher from a bastion of non-conservative policy and academics in the middle part of California came in and did this test. They came out and they said they wanted to know the barriers there were to learning. And here's some of the questions that were in it. It said, are you worried, does these things interfere with first, third, and fifth graders, does this interfere with your learning? Are you worried about somebody touching my private parts too much? Are you thinking about having sex? Are you worried about people touching other people's private parts? Are you thinking about sex when you don't want to? Are you washing yourself because I feel dirty inside? Am I not trusting people because they might want sex? Am I getting scared or upset when I think about sex? Do I have sex feelings in my body? I can't stop thinking about sex. Getting upset when people talk about sex. And it went down. There were like 40 some questions. They went down first, third, and fifth graders. And so there was a consent form that went home to parents, and parents had the opportunity to say, no, thank you. Thanks, but no thanks. I don't want my kid to participate. So the school did. So there was an opportunity to opt out. But as we all know, parents have a tendency to either children have a tendency not to read the letter, or parents don't see it and don't. And so some parents didn't opt out, and their kids went through the process. And so when the parents found out their kids had been exposed to these questions, they sued the school district. And so what you had here is they came through, and this is an appeal to the school district that they were seeking declaring a violation of constitutional rights and liberty interests, violating their liberty interests in raising their children. And as they came through, it was interesting. The court initially says, we're not going to comment about whether this is how smart this was to have this questionnaire. We're not going to talk about that because that's actually a school district issue. I think we made the right decision a few years ago, and we cut out the risky survey for a lot of the same questions. The risk have a survey. But starting with California, the circuit court in California says this. It says, starts out with this premise. As with all constitutional rights, the rights of parents to make decisions about care, custody, and control of their children recognizes those are fundamental rights, but as with all fundamental rights, there are not some restriction. If you go to the bill, the fundamental rights you have in raising your children are the care, custody, and control. This is not about care, custody, or control. If you look at the bill, it's about the upbringing, education, and care of your children. And so if you go back and look at what the court said in Fields, there's just a couple things I'd share with you, is they say that, and they talk about Meyer and the Pierce cases, which go a long way back in talking about schools and what schools can do and can't do. It says the Meyer and Pierce cases, we think, evince a principle that the state cannot prevent parents from choosing a specific educational program, whether it be religious instruction at a private school or instruction in a foreign language. That is, the state does not have the power to standardize its children or foster homogeneous people by completely foreclosing the opportunity of individuals and groups to choose a different path of education. We do not think, however, that this freedom encompasses a fundamental right to dictate curriculum at the public school to which they have chosen to send their children. We think it is fundamentally different for a state to say to the parent, You cannot teach your child German or send him to a parochial school. Then for a parent to say to the state, you cannot teach my child subjects that are morally offensive to me. And it goes on and talks about that. It says, although parents are legitimately concerned with the subject of sexuality, there is no constitutional reason to distinguish that concern from the countless moral, religious, or other philosophical objections that parents might have to other decisions of the school district, whether those objections are in regard to information concerning guns, violence, the military, gay marriage, racial equality, slavery, the dissection of animals, the teaching of scientifically validated theories on the origins of life. The schools cannot be expected to accommodate the personal, moral, or religious concerns of every parent. Such an obligation would not only contravene the educational mission of public schools, but would be also impossible to satisfy. And I think that's where, I think they got it exactly right. And I think that's the concern I have with this bill. It provides, if it's not that fundamental right about your care and the upbringing of your children, that's the fundamental right. And if you get back to curriculum and other things, then it's not a fundamental right, because now you're dictating to the public school what the public school will teach. They have other access. They have access to the state school board. They have access to the legislature. They have access to the local school board, which is actually should be in charge of curriculum, although we seem to interfere with that from time to time. But anyway, as we go about this bill, it does a lot more than what they're saying it does. And I don't, Troxell hasn't, I don't believe Troxell, I disagree with my learned colleague in front of me, I don't think Troxell is that hard. And if the Ninth Circuit can get it right, I don't think it's hard, that hard for the Tenth or other circuits to get it right as well.
Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with the good senator that spoke before me. I would like to just say that this bill, it seems really great on its face. It looks like all-American, apple pie, kissing pigs at fairs, but it's not pretty. The devil's in the details here. It really is vague. It applies the harshest standard of review, which is strict scrutiny, and that places an impossible burden on government schools and agencies when they have to fight with a parent. The tagline for strict scrutiny at the level of review is strict in theory, fatal in fact. When this type of bill was introduced in 1995 by the same group that's, you know, got the red button, push and pay, when they tried to introduce it in Congress in 1995, it failed. And in that one, there was a four-prong test, not just this two-prong test that we have here. The four-prong test basically put some burden on the parents as well as the government or school agency. And so what you look at is, the proponents say, oh, this bill is simply codifying existing law. If that's true, it's unnecessary. If not, what are we doing? It's a tonyism. It does nothing or it's bad.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill. A few years ago, I remember a bringer of this bill, and I had a chance to visit with this particular individual who was representing the rights of children. And so as I started doing some research about Troxell and, you know, what kind of the impetus for this language was, I came across some Wyoming Supreme Court language. And I think my biggest concern about this bill is it talks a lot about parental rights, but not at all about the rights of kids or rights of children. And sometimes those two interests are at odds. So in a Wyoming Supreme Court case of 2012 called Arnott versus Arnott, it was a case that the Wyoming Supreme Court looked at involving a divorce and the custody of children. And the court highlighted some important concepts, and I think that we need to keep those in mind. In the wreckage of any marriage, vindication of parental rights shall not be lavished at the expense of the paramount purpose of serving the welfare and the best interest of children, quoting a 1953 Wyoming Supreme Court case. This particular case then goes on to cite another important concept. Recognition that parental rights are fundamental does not alter the cardinal rule that when the rights of the parent and the rights of the child collide, it is the rights of the parents which must yield. And that's citing, again, some more Wyoming case law from 1984 and 1926. So when I think about our fundamental rights as parents, that is an important right, but as we're looking at articulating those rights in statute, which I have concerns about, if they're fundamental, they shouldn't be articulated in statute. We have them already. This seems like a very one-sided approach and doesn't consider the rights of children. So I'd urge your defeat of this bill.
Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to answer that last question. This bill doesn't conflict with family law, and family law would take precedence if the issue was about custody and issues with a child. This issue, this bill is clearly on upbringing and education and the parents. And we talk about the, all these cases outside of Wyoming, Mr. Chairman. But there was a case here just a county north of us where it, and some of you know that I hate to use the word bomb thrower, and but I've actually went into a situation where they had taken the gun rights away from parents. And what it came down to is that the child had pneumonia and was absent a number of days of school. And then the parents, they had a situation where the father had to have an operation down in Denver. And that certainly caused disruption in the family in the time that they were away from home, you know, which was to the north of us. And there was some discrepancy within the school of how many days that the child was absent. And it seemed to me that, if I remember correctly, this, there was a discrepancy between 5 days between what the school said and what the principal said. And all I can tell you is that by the time the smoke cleared, I think the principal had to move on. The prosecutor, and I guess let me get to the heart of this, what they basically did is told the parents that you had to go to court because you had your child out of school and you're in trouble. And like I said, by the time they got done through the prosecutor and the courts, they had a probation thing in their hand that said you can't even have guns. You got to take your guns out of your house. And that's how I got involved. And like I said, when the smoke cleared, the prosecutor didn't run again. I think the issue was moved on. The parent took her child out of school and homeschooled because she said, I don't know what this was all about. We had serious situations in our family that we had to take care of, and we had to fight with the government. This bill is for cases like that. On for the bill. I hope that the body votes yes.
Further questions on the bill? Question being called. Senator Kinski.
Like many of my colleagues, when I was first approached about this several years ago, I thought the law of the land was clear and that the bill was unnecessary. At their urging, I did take a very close reading of the Troxell case and looked at other cases stemming from it in other states where courts have become confused and watered down the standard and concluded that there was merit in this bill. The purpose of the bill is not to set off an avalanche of litigation over what the content of a public school curriculum is. And if we need a second or a third reading amendment to make that clear, we certainly would regard that as a friendly amendment. Yes, the cases talk about care, custody, and control, which I think contemplates education. The Palmdale case, which my colleague from Casper cites, I don't know anything about a website or a big red button, the Palmdale case was correctly decided. When you drop your child off at a public school, the Pierce-Meyer doctrine stops at the schoolhouse door. That's longstanding jurisprudence on parental rights as well. But you do have a fundamental right to decide to put your child into a non-public school and direct that child's education. You have a fundamental right to homeschool your child, and that is a fundamental right as well. So the Palmdale case is that was correctly decided. And yes, the intent of the folks who are concerned here is not to sue school districts over curriculum. That is absolutely not the intent. And any amendment we've got to have to make that clear is certainly welcomed. The other discussions about divorce and custody are not directly on point to what we're talking about here. The law of the land is that you have a fundamental right to raise your child. Anything that infringes on that is subject to strict scrutiny, and it must be shown that it's by the least restrictive means. Now, if you're in divorce, a court is going to balance the interest of the child against the two feuding parents. Where this doctrine comes in, the strict scrutiny standard is in situations where, for instance, it's not two warring parents, but it's a court awarding visitation over the objection of the parents, a law that purports to say we're going to award visitation over the objection of the parents. Now that kind of law must and should be subjected to a strict scrutiny standard, which did not happen in Troxell. a law there purported to say we're going to award custody to people who maybe not even related, or visitation maybe not even related to the child, or maybe it's a grandparent, but it's objectionable to the parents. That kind of law must be subjected, absent of showing that the parent is unfit, must be subjected to strict scrutiny. And those are the kind of things that were cast into doubt by Troxell. So the bill is intended to be not a stalking horse for litigation against school curriculum, but a simple restatement of the law and a second or third reading amendment that makes that clear, I would welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm really hesitant to get up and debate five attorneys and talk about all the different laws and Supreme Court cases and on and on. And when I signed on to this bill, it was very clear to me, at least, and if we need to clarify it, let's do it. But when I saw the liberty of a parent to direct the upbringing, education, I thought, and I think there's some law somewhere that I can't remember where I read it, but that gave me the right to decide what type of education. So if I want to homeschool, I can homeschool. If I want to go to the public education route, I can do that. If I want to go to a charter school, I can do that. If I want to send my child back east to some big fancy private school, which I wouldn't do, but if I wanted to, I sure could do that. And that's what I thought this meant. If it doesn't mean that, then maybe we can clarify that. I don't think, at least when I signed on to this bill, I didn't intend to have a parent come into a K-3 and tell a third-grade teacher he didn't like the way she was teaching math and use this law, if this ever passes, as a basis to contest that. I thought that's what we were talking about. So maybe some of the attorneys can tell me where I'm wrong, or we can come up with an amendment to clarify it. I'm in support of the bill.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Question I have is over on page 2, where in lines 10 and 11, where it says that whether that law or ordinance was adopted prior to. And so I'm guessing what this is doing there, and in the explanation of the Troxell case, a few years ago we passed the Grandparents' Visitation Rights Bill, and what I'm assuming is that we're just throwing that under the bus, and I don't know whether you got a compelling state interest in that regard or not, but that's what my question would be.
Senator Nethercott. Oh, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I agree with my good friend from Goshen County. As I read the C paragraph, it really does sound like it's just a long way of saying notwithstanding any other provision of law, which does bring concern, because it's difficult to understand then what the ramifications are of this. On one hand, we hear that this is just the way we do things already, which I would be comfortable with were we not having to incorporate it into law. So if this is what's going on now, and it's basically a restatement of all that we're doing, we probably don't need it. But when we have the concept of the parent directing the upbringing and then the education specifically is the concern and care of the parent's child, the idea that we still have the family law doctrine or the grandparent provision or any other aspect of statute having the same weight that it previously did, it doesn't make sense to me. To me, every statute is now subject to a potential lawsuit to see if it meets a strict scrutiny test, if it is the simplest and most direct way to meet the state's interest, or if there's a compelling state interest along those lines in the first place. And we won't know that until a whole new sortie of lawsuits end up getting filed and settled. Whereas right now, we have case law. We understand where things are at, and from the testimony even of the sponsors, we haven't had any of these concerns or these rights, I should say, eroded in the state of Wyoming. So this is certainly a solution in search of a problem where I haven't heard a single instance in Wyoming of a problem identified. If it's working right now and there's this much concern over the possible ramifications, I'm not sure why we would adopt legislation that has this potential impact, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I just talked about a problem that we had. I mean, we had a problem where the school district battled with the parents, And by the time they ran through the system, they had put them on probation and taken their gun rights away over a discrepancy over five days between the school district or the school and the principal. And I just think that this clarifies that they just don't have the right to run you through the ringer every time that they decide that they want to. So, honor for the bill.
Further questions on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Kinski's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation that House Bill 153 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Division being called. All those in favor, please stand up. Thank you. All those opposed, stand. Thank you. 17 ayes, 11 noes. Motion, House Bill 153 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 186. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 186, Engrossed, Improvement and Service District Services, sponsored by Representative Kirkbride, an act relating to improvement and service districts, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Pappas, and Scott. Excused, Senators Agar and Ethercott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Very much, Mr. Chairman. I move that when a Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 186, Improvement and Service District Services. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Okay. House Bill 186, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Engrossed Copy, page 2, line 5.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 186, and I would like you to vote no on the Standing Committee Amendment. I've discussed this with the committee. There's a technical problem with the Standing Committee Amendment, and we need to fess up right now. Mr. Chairman, the problem is this has to do with when a service and improvement district expands services. And the bill, I appreciate the sponsor's work on this bill because what he did was say, well, if we're going to say we're doing roads and we want to end up doing water within the same boundary, the bill says that they have to go back and get a vote of the people. Well, what I was trying to do, and it's really this is all my fault, actually, is that there's a thing called a formation petition that allows that you to get the idea of making a special district on the ballot. The formation petition has a certain percentage of landowners that have to be on the petition and a certain percentage of voters. And I was mixed up in my mind. I was thinking that was the requirements for the actual vote. That's just the requirements for the petition. And so the petition requirements get it on the ballot, but the ballot is a simple majority. So the Standing Committee Amendment is unworkable, and I'd ask that you defeat it. And then I would ask you to yield after that to the good Senator Dockstader, who will explain the bill.
Okay. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 186, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 186 has failed. Back on the bill, Senator Dockstader.
I killed my own amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I was unable to attend the meeting when we were doing this, so I'll just give you just a brief overview as I understand it from the sponsor. My understanding is that, and I'll need some help here from the chairman on this if I could. In fact, maybe I'll defer it back to him. Could I do that?
I just need a candy bar.
Senator Case.
1 minute. I can dance. Okay.
So the good representative, this came out of the Special District Task Force kind of in an oblique way. There's folks that are involved in water services that were part of the task force, and the good representative listed as a sponsor on this bill was part of the task force. And they suggested during the task force that it ought to be possible for a special district to expand its function, to move into more services that are not, they don't provide. They might be a road district, and they now want to provide water services to, you know, a geographic area. And it was argued during the task force that that ought to be an easy thing to do. The district board ought to just be able to pass a resolution and then take on new services. Well, we pushed back on that idea, and we didn't pass that out of the special district task force. And the sponsor spent some more time thinking about this bill and thought about it. And what this does is put some more meat on that. And he's really taken to heart the suggestion that you can't do that just as a board, but that it has to be approved by both the county commissioners and the voters, Mr. Chairman. So that is what the bill does. So it would allow a district that's formed, say, for the purpose of roads, which is very typical, to expand to take over the water system, but only if it's approved by the county commissioners. Well, first the district has to pass a resolution, county commissioners have to approve it, and the voters have to approve it, the people within the district. That's what the bill does. I think it's a good balance. Well, the standing committee amendment was trying to say, well, it also has to be the right percentage of landowners and voters, but that's unworkable, and that only relates to the petition, not the approval. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman. I ask for your support.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion and the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 186, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 186 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 235. Would the reading clerk read the bill?
House Bill 235, Engrossed, Mentor Small Game and Game Bird Hunting, sponsored by Representative Miller, an act relating to game and fish, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz, Senator Emmerich, Chairman.
If you've heard the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 235 do pass. And for an explanation of this good little bill, I'd like to yield to Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, let's go hunting. But Mr. Chairman, this is finally referred to as Representative Miller's rabbit bill. It has to deal with small game. It's essentially a mentor bill for small game and game birds. Senator Miller, Representative Miller, had a touching story about when he was growing up in the. But I'm not going to go into a lot of that in the interest of time. I can tell you some stories that I had when I was growing up.
Maybe we'll use the 8-second rule.
Yeah, the 8-second rule is that this is a good bill, and let's vote it up. If you really want to talk about it, I'll do it.
Questions? Seeing no questions, are we calling for the question? Question being called. Whoa, we have questions.
Oh, come on.
Senator Burns.
Just so I understand this, so the mentor is using their license for the minor to shoot the small game or bird. So does that mean the mentor can only mentor one person because they only get the one license?
Senator Meyer.
Okay, let's go into the details then. The answer is yes on anybody's property except for their own or with a family member.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 235, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. House Bill 235 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for consideration is House Bill 266. The reading clerk would read the bill.
House Bill 266, engrossed, Study on Evaluation Requirements for Small Cities and Towns, sponsored by Representative Laux, an act relating to the Department of Audit, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, and Scott. Excused, Senator Pappas. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, this is... Give me the bill number again. I'm sorry.
266?
Yes, that, 266. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 266, Study on Evaluation Requirements for Small Cities and Towns. Mr. Chairman, for an explanation of the bill, I would yield to the good senator from the two good senators from Natrona County. Take your pick, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have before you House Bill 266. It comes out of an event that happened in a small, very small town in my district, where the lack of internal control in the small town resulted in a theft by one of the town officials, and appears that one of the council people was complicit. Now we have some criminal convictions of some people that were in these small towns. And the problem that you have in these small towns is that there's not a lot of oversight. A number of years ago, the legislature changed it so that the Department of Audit may audit these towns from time to time. This little town hadn't been audited in 29 and a half years. And the problem that you have in these small towns is that it's the same internal control as you have in any business. If you have the same person's cashing the checks, writing the bills, making the deposits, it really becomes really easy to eventually, and sometimes a temptation to override those systems and end up stealing. And so what this does is it provides an opportunity for these towns to get a review short of an audit, because audits are frankly just too expensive. A full-blown audit, the other thing that happens with a full-blown audit is oftentimes you don't see anything until after it's already done. So the object of this is to provide either by a certified public accountant, or you could have, I think you can also do fiscal review by the Department of Audit, have the opportunity to come in and review these towns with something less than a full audit to examine their internal control and make recommendations to these folks and educate them about how they can make sure that the public funds that they're entrusted with have the whatever internal controls they need to make sure that they're safeguarded and those types of things don't happen. We ask your favorable consideration. Would stand for questions.
Questions. Any questions? Seeing none, is there a call for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 266, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 266 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 280. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 280, Vehicle Registration Requirements, sponsored by Representative Eklund, an act relating to motor vehicles, was referred to Committee Number 8, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer. Excused, Senator Agar. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Meyer.
Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a do pass motion on House Bill 280. There was a standing committee amendment. I would ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
House Bill 280, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 6.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 280. And I'll explain that amendment at the right time and ask for its consideration then, Mr. Chairman. Folks, this is one of our time-honored traditions of trying to figure out what we do with people who love to live in Wyoming but refuse to pay the taxes. So, Mr. Chairman, what we do here is, and these are on vehicle registrations and sales and use taxes, primarily use taxes, folks that are residents, but they own and operate and control a vehicle in Wyoming, but it is licensed in another state. We have laws on the books that say that they have to license these, but they're relatively small in the fines that are associated with them. We don't deal with the fine if somebody violates that, but what we do in this bill is provide that the registration and pass registration is paid and the sales and use tax is paid. Now, I'd like to go to the amendment right now, because what the bill does, it would claw back in time ex post facto, so to speak, and seek to pick up those sales and use taxes and pass and delinquent registrations. What this one is just a grace period, essentially, that allows these folks to go in and get their vehicles registered and take care of that. And we give them a year to do that because there's a delayed effective date on the act. But what the amendment does is it allows them to go back in and not be subject to the now statutory three-year clawback on use taxes. So this is a get-out-of-penalty on use taxes and a get-out-of-penalty on the clawback on registration. We had the good senator from Teton County was very insistent that we try to move forward on something like that because of essentially an ex post facto position that he explained to us was that why penalize someone or provide some kind of a penalty on something that necessarily wasn't against the law. It was a little bit unclarified, I think, in the area of sales or use tax. It was pretty clear in registration, but the provision on use tax wasn't that clear. So we went along with his suggestion, and that's what this amendment does, is allow to say that going forward after 2018, you're going to be subject to a three-year clawback on your use tax if you don't get in and register before July of 18. So that's what the amendment does. I stand for questions on the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions on the amendment?
I would call for a question on the amendment.
Question being called. All of those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 280, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I think I've explained the bill. If you want to go into the particular paragraph by paragraph, blow by blow, we'll do that. Question being called for. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 280, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion carries. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 253. Will the reading clerk read the bill?
House Bill 253, Engrossed, Economic Development Account Funding, sponsored by Representative Harshman, an act related to economic development, was referred to Committee Number 9, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flavern. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chair.
For the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure? Looks like Senator Von Flaterin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass on House Bill 58 and to explain this bill.
I think, Mr.
253.
House Bill
excuse me.
Okay.
On House Bill 253, and I'm not sure who is actually going to explain. The President will explain this.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, we had quite a bit of discussion about this bill the other day, and then we realized we hadn't sent it to the Appropriations Committee, so it was sent over there for as a referral. We can get into the discussion, Mr. Chairman, or we can do like my colleague from Goshen County says, we could just vote this bill through and move on, but I'm not sure that'll happen with this one. Mr. Chairman, what this does, and it talks about large projects, and it gets back to the constitutional amendment passed in the mid-70s under article, we call it the Amendment 4, of our Constitution, which set up that we could utilize 1% of our assessed valuation to do economic development projects within the state. And, Mr. Chairman, I will tell you that early on it didn't work very well. The way it was set up and how the funds were distributed, most of those funds, we lost money, quite frankly, Mr. Chairman. And over time, this thing has gotten better and better and better. And the most recent thing where we utilized this article or this amendment for money, Mr. Chairman, was several years ago for a particular project up in the northwestern part of the state. And it was set aside for that specific project to go ahead and get the money from, I believe we took it out of our revenue stream back then. And the amount of money was $25 million, and it was approved and requires a two-thirds vote. Mr. Chairman, that did pass both bodies. A two-thirds vote was there. And that money went through the process and state treasurer involved and SLIB. And actually what happened, Mr. Chairman, that $25 million was divided between three projects. I can't remember where they were. I believe one was still in Cody. I believe two are in Cheyenne. I can't tell you for sure. Maybe someone else could speak to those. And so, and the way it was set up, there's the security is there for the state. It's a way to create some economic development, some diversity. And what we do with this bill, Mr. Chairman, is come back and ask for another $25 million to be utilized in the same vein. I will tell you, Mr. Chairman, that we don't have names of specifically of projects on the board, but in the meetings I've had, there's several companies that are very interested. Another one in Cody. I believe there's one in Gillette, and maybe one in, what's the other state? There's another state, not another state, but another city. So there's three projects out there. And, of course, this goes through the process, Mr. Chairman, of where they would have to apply. It goes through the SLIB board, the state treasurer is involved. And one of the things that this specifically talks about, and I mentioned it the other day, Mr. Chairman, where we have a lot of money we spend on the broadband to have internet, high-speed internet around the state. I believe we have 100 gigs. In fact, Wyoming leads the nation in terms of how we make that available to our school districts. We put in a provision in this on page 2 under lines 2 would be improving broadband services as a potential thing to utilize these funds for. Mr. Chairman, that's what this bill does. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I appreciate the testimony on the bill. My question is about the issue of broadband. Broadband is provided by private companies around the state of Wyoming, some of which are licensed local exchange carriers, others are other unregulated cable television companies. Broadband services available from private companies via cellular service, Mr. President, and also by satellite. So all these options do exist now. It's a very competitive market. It is expensive in rural areas. Let's be clear. And satellite connections of sufficient capacity are expensive, but so is every other connection in those areas. So my question is, how will this respect the Wyoming tradition of private and competitive markets and allow for broadband development in a way that really respects the fact that these are certificated territories for telephone companies that serve throughout the state and are generally competitively provided. There is a disparity between how broadband services are provided in big cities and very rural areas, but broadband has been expanding to our medium-sized cities and smaller towns. There are many small telephone companies that have significant fiber optic networks. They made great investment and high-speed services available. In my own town, which I can speak directly to, fiber service just became available to my business, and I'm considering having a fiber connection. It's actually surprisingly reasonable, but basically because I'm close to the main line. But all this happens when the government puts the thumb on the scale and say, we've got $25 million, let's use at least part of it for broadband, and it's a very competitive market, Mr. Chairman, and there are private companies involved here. I'd like to know what the safeguards are, that we're not choosing winners and losers, that we're not trying to put our expertise into the market expertise, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to know a lot more about that. Thank you.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. In discussion, you know, the good senator from Landers is exactly correct. I'm not quite sure the broadband discussion originated in the House, and this was not the original intent of the bill. I wasn't privy to the discussion they had, but somehow it picked up momentum and is part of the bill. We might want to look at that because I think it does come in direct conflict with private enterprise. Back on the bill, Mr. Chairman, I was the sponsor on the first bill in 2014, and it had a direct reference on to a project I was very close with up in northwest Wyoming, and we made it constitutional at the end of the day and by using the amendment for money and doing things. I'm a big supporter of this because I think it works. And I need to tell you that other states out there, around us in particular, they've got programs that are huge compared to this one. They're providing incentives out there for businesses like crazy. But the nature of the beast in Wyoming today is that the mineral dependency that we're all familiar with is still prevalent. And economic diversification is the key, I think, to how we're going to help ourselves get out of the doldrums that we're in. The original 25 went for a project up in the northwest part of the state, up in my county, one over in Gillette, and I think one down here in Cheyenne. Well used. The scrutiny through the business council and the state treasurer and ultimately the governor gives us the security I think we need when we start utilizing a program like this. So I'm a strong proponent of this. We've had great success with it up in my part of the state and would ask that you support House Bill 253. I think it's a good bill at the right time as we try to diversify away from minerals.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good Senator from Park County brings me back to that 2014 vote, and I was an original no, but then as I sat down and studied it back in 2014, I realized that we probably should start setting ourselves up for a little better situation, a better way to fund this state. And so I actually came around back in 2014 and on the final vote gave it a yes, and the good senator from up in Cody gave us a great example. It's a success story over there, and I appreciate him doing that. And he touched on the point that we really got to think about. The financial picture has changed for this state. It's not all coming out of the ground anymore. It's not all. We see that now as we get ready to pick winners and losers with the schools we build. The coal money's not there. We're wishing that it'd be colder out in Chicago so we get a higher price for gas. All of those things. It's a changed picture. And so I'm one of those that would have been originally said, no, not no way. But we stepped out. We did it. Senator from up in the Cody country gave us a great example to follow, a success story. So I'm an aye. The picture's changed. It's time to move a piece of legislation like this forward.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, a little bit of concerns, and let me see if I can express those concerns. As I'm sitting here and I'm looking at natural gas prices as of today at the Opal hub, dropping like a rock, folks, $2.70 a MCF. That's where we derive the biggest bulk of our mineral severance taxes come from natural gas. Gives me great concern that we're now going to dip $25 million out of our savings account when the whole projection was to try to put this on about a 6 or 7 year burn rate. The natural gas prices aren't looking rosy right now. Gives me some concern. And then the other concern I have is if we can get a little discussion. There's already $55 million in the Wyoming Business Council program. Why is that money not adequate to do what we need to do, and why are we adding another $25 million to the Wyoming Business Council to do it when they've got a $55 million budget as it sits today? If the supplemental budget passes, it looks like it's going to. So do we want to continue to drain our savings? I think economic diversification is a great thing. But I'm just telling you, we've got some woes coming down the road that if we obligate $25 million now out of savings, that be maybe the $25 million you need to get someplace down the road in a couple of years.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, very simple question for the proponents. If we put this money out, what kind of a rate of return or interest rate do we expect to get off it?
Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, this is a good bill. From a perspective of a representing some small communities up in that northwest part of the state, if we use the philosophy of the business council not needing extra money, we sacrifice either this program, the large project program, or if they divert all that money to a large project program, then the smaller municipalities, counties that have smaller projects, they're robbed. So that's why the extra money is needed. We talk about diversification. This is the only thing I've seen so far that will provide that diversification in our state away from our minerals. And if the broadband is a poison pill on this particular bill, we can take care of that in Second Amendment. I, too, have concerns about that. You know, in our area, we pay for broadband and high-speed internet and fiber optics to a private company, and we pay every month on our rate charges. And so picking winners and losers is a concern for me, and if we were to remove that in second reading, this would be a great bill. So on and for the bill.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, just to answer the concerns of my friend from Savory over here, Bags or wherever, the Little Snake River country, he makes a case for the bill when you start talking about natural gas. And I'll tell you why. I do a little bit of Energy Council stuff on the side, and there's a company in Louisiana that built an LNG terminal with the idea of importing natural gas. Billions, I mean literally $20 to $30 billion worth of facilities. Now they turn it around, they're going to export natural gas because this country with the play in Pennsylvania, who is now the number two gas producer in the country. Clearly, Texas is number one. They're number two now, and now between Wyoming and New Mexico, we're the fourth or third. But the other side of the equation is that since 2009 with natural gas, we exported an all-time record in 2009, 5.5 billion feet of gas a day. And through the Opal hub, we ship 37% of California's natural gas. But our production is down. The country has an oversupply of natural gas right now. The good days of even $4 natural gas are not coming back for quite a while. So just try to answer that concern that the good senator from the Little Snake River country had. Ask that you support the bill.
Senator Von Flaner, did you have a comment?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. This goes to the tall senator from Natrona County. If the treasurer sets the interest rate on the money as he does the analysis, when you see on page 2, I think it starts on line 11. So he analyzes the cost of that funds, and at the time of the loan, that interest rate is set at that time.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to clarify one other point of discussion from my good friend from Carbon County about the existing funds within the Wyoming Business Council, and can't they just use some of the funds they have? Mr. Chairman, those funds are not fungible to this program. Those funds, almost all the funds they have, are available for grants to municipalities and instruments of government throughout the state. This particular fund, revolving investment fund created under Article 16, Section 12 of the Wyoming Constitution, is specifically allowed to be loaned out in investments for business. So there's no way you can take the funds from the one account and then use them over here if that's more convenient. In fact, this is a process that has to go through the legislature and receive, I believe, a two-thirds vote to be invested in this manner. Entirely separate from what the business council would otherwise be allowed to do. So there's no way those funds can be commingled.
Seeing no further questions, the question being called. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatterin's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 253, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion carries. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 58. Will the reading clerk read the bill?
House Bill 58, School Facilities Appropriations, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to school facility projects, was referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Dockstader, acting chair.
We've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 58, School Facilities Appropriations. There is a standing committee amendment, and I would ask that it be read in now.
House Bill 58, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 6, line 8.
I would move the standing committee amendment, and for an explanation of both the bill and the standing committee amendment, I ask that you call on Senator Landon.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm fully cognizant of the fact that I stand between you senators and the end of the board, so I will do my best to get through the bill in a fairly quick fashion, Mr. Chairman, but I do want to make sure that you have the information that you need on a pretty important bill to be considered this afternoon. This is our school facilities appropriations bill. It comes out of your select committee on school facilities, which I chair, and is the result of work during the interim. I want to first say that as you look at your bill, fellow senators, please know that this is a bill that was passed last session. So if it doesn't have stricken language or underlined language, it doesn't have anything to do with our supplemental discussion this afternoon. So please look for that as we go. Mr. Chairman, this bill contains two major capital construction projects. You'll find those on page 7. It contains the appropriation for the lease of modulars. You'll find those on page 5. Our charter school leases, there's one in your neck of the woods, and there's one right here in Laramie County, and those can be found on pages 9 and 10. There are two major maintenance projects in this bill, fellow senators, page 5 and page 6. Those relate to up in the northern part of the state and then another one down in Carbon County. There is a demolition project that I will tell you about here in just a minute. That can be found on page 11. And, Mr. Chairman, so with that overview, I just want to get you quickly into the bill and work you through it. If you go to page 2, I will call your attention to that underlined language that I mentioned a few minutes ago. As you can see, we conform the language so that it is understood that we are appropriating money for the supplemental budget request on line 6 and 7. We do that again on 6 and 7 on page 3. Mr. Chairman, we get over to page 5, and that's where I would call your attention to a couple of the aforementioned items that are in this bill. The emergency funding in Bighorn 2, that is a cafeteria, Mr. Chairman, up in the northern part of the state that we've had some major problems with, and this is the funding to take care of that problem up in Lovell. You'll see that on line 7. The leases down through the bottom of page 5, those are the leases primarily. In fact, all of them are for here in Laramie County. I will tell you, fellow senators, that we have, I think, as many as 83 modulars out across our state. So that is not out of the ordinary. Those leases come due here, and that's why they're contained in this bill. If you go over on page 6, you will see the two major projects that are brought forward out of your interim work. And that is the elementary school in Teton County, the junior high school in Laramie County, and you'll see those two figures on the right side as to the cost of projects. I'll take just a moment, Mr. Chairman, to explain to you that there was extensive conversation over the interim about major maintenance projects versus construction projects. Ultimately, your School Facilities Commission, which reports to our select committee, came to us with this recommendation, and we ultimately agreed with that, Mr. Chairman. We have two districts out across our state that are outliers. They are outliers because they're busy growing while the rest of the state is diminishing in enrollment. And those districts are Teton and Laramie County. So that is in part why your select committee came forward with those two projects as a recommendation to you. Going on through the bill, I want to quickly finish this up, Mr. Chairman, so that we can get to any questions and to the standing committee amendment. I'll take you all the way over to page 8, and something I didn't mention in the introduction is the fact that we set aside 4% of the capital construction monies for unanticipated cost on any time we do a project, and you'll see that figure in the bill on page 8, $3,444,000. If we go over to the bottom of page 9, I'll call your attention to the $799,000 figure. That is the leases. We had considerable conversation on these leases, one of which is here in Cheyenne, Mr. Chairman, and is rather substantial as an amount of money that we pay in rent on a facility here in this community, and thus the language on the bottom of page 10, which calls on our school facilities division and commission to evaluate facility options for those charter schools and come back to the select committee with information in that regard. We want to study that during this next interim. Over on page 11, I want to spend just a moment, Mr. Chairman, to explain a project up in the northeast part of the state. There is a building up on Main Street in the town up there, not far from where our friend from the tower lives. It's the worst rated administrative building in the state. It has sat for quite some time, and it's up to us to demolish that building. We have an opportunity now to demolish it before they close down the landfill. And the reason that's important is that we can save an awful lot of money on that project if we pull the trigger now and go ahead and help that community by getting rid of that building. I can spend more time on that for you if you would like, but I think that is an important project. The select committee certainly felt so, and we want to demolish that building up in Sundance. For emergency projects, this bill contains an appropriation of $1.1 million. Mr. Chairman, the School Facilities Division does not have much emergency money available, and we felt like it was important to free up that $1.1 million. That's what that is. The professional services fees up on the top of page 12, Mr. Chairman, that is for planning and a statewide comprehensive look at major maintenance going forward. We have touched on it several times during this session about major maintenance and facilities needs out there and the fact that we don't really have the funding. But this goes right to the issue of us being able on the select committee to come back to you, Mr. Chairman, with a recommendation of how do we want to go forward with major maintenance and what should those levels be in terms of how much money we're going to be spending budget-wise. Mr. Chairman, you get down to the bottom of page 12, there's the appropriation. The bill actually contains about $85 million in appropriations and not that $80 million figure. That gets us through the bill, Mr. Chairman. I think hopefully I've touched on everything that's in there. I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Meyer.
I'm kind of curious about that appropriation for the major maintenance study, because I had talked to the director. What he told me, if we wanted to extend the life of our buildings to from 50 years to 70 years, we'd have to spend $225 million. And I think he knows what he's talking about, so I'm wondering why If the director could give me that type of detail on extending the life from 50 to 70 years, why do we have to have a study?
Senator Landon?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. That's a great question from my colleague over in Goshen County. We discussed this at some length, and frankly, Mr. Chairman, we just felt like it deserves a much more careful look than a select committee could accomplish on its own, or that the division could do on its own. We would like to bring in some experts and really be able to take a hard look at you know, how are we going to approach the future, and if we want those buildings to last, what exactly is that figure, and what can we bring back? I think it's actually a study that would be pretty valuable to us, especially in light of the fact that we're going to be discussing over the next year or two where's that funding stream and what sorts of budgetary amounts are we going to have to come up with to take care of those 24 million square feet of buildings that we have out across Wyoming. So that's a big task. It amounts to 400 schools and buildings out across there. We thought it was appropriate.
Senator Meyer.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess my concern is that we have this study that's obviously going to be done by competent people, and they come back in and say, yes, we're going to have to spend $225 million a year. Then are we obligated under, I guess, the Constitution to provide that $225 million? And that's just another thing we can add on to the $360 million that we're going to owe on the operations side. So I don't know. Maybe if what we don't know might not hurt us, but if we find out what we could know, I'm wondering if that could hurt us.
Senator Rossless.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the Select Committee in the interim talking about this topic, it was never a discussion of trying to figure out what we needed to pay each year to maintain the fleet from a constitutional standpoint. It was really more of a how do we do things right now and how can we do them better, recognizing that we don't necessarily build as efficiently over the total cost of ownership of the buildings that we could. We don't do a consideration of should it be a 50-year tile that we add or a 70-year tile or a 25-year tile, how long should the roofs last. Those are the types of things that would be valuable to the state, but the way we end up budgeting for school buildings do not take that into consideration. The method we use tends to be what is the lowest total cost of the building today. So the day it's being built, you get that number as low as possible, and then it turns out that it costs you a lot more over the lifetime of the building because you shorted on the front end. In our discussions on the Select Committee, we recognized that that was a naive approach to budgeting and was not saving the state money. It was, in fact, costing the state money. Based on that discussion and based on other discussions just about how we should utilize our major maintenance versus when we should build a new building, when we should use components. Those types of discussions led us to realize that we don't have a good handle, Mr. Chairman, on how to efficiently incorporate all of the components of our budgeting for our school buildings, school facilities, major maintenance, and all of the rest. That's the motivating factor behind this. And to the extent that we've spent literally billions of dollars over the past decade and a half using a system that was not optimized, while $300,000 sounds like it's a lot of money in an economic downturn, and it certainly is, we're not rich enough right now to be mismanaging our funds. We need to do the study, spend some money on the front end, and then be a lot more efficient with those dollars moving forward when they become available.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I appreciate that help from my friend from Laramie. We have $612,732,000 in deferred maintenance waiting out there right now. That's just the maintenance side of things. And the senator's right. We're hoping we do not believe, to my good friend from the eastern side of the state, we do not believe that this is going to do anything except give you all and us on the Select Committee some valuable information that we can bring back to you so that we know all of what we face and all of what we could be doing in a better way. With those kinds of deferred maintenance staring at us, Mr. Chairman, and all of that square footage out there, and the fact that through the Campbell decisions and all of that that we've already discussed, those buildings belong to us. And I think it's incumbent upon us to do a better job than we have been at really honing in on how we can maintain them properly and extend the life of those buildings, especially during a downturn like we face now. So I hope that helps a little bit to explain that.
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions just to refresh my memory. We funded all the major maintenance for the current biennium, I believe. So that would be my first question. If we have, to what extent? And I know there's no construction dollars available, and I'm almost certain that when we talk about the $1.5 billion out there for the next couple of years for the foundation program, it does not include the major maintenance. I just want to be sure of that. Then the other thing, Mr. Chairman, is on page 6. When you prioritize these, you have on line 7, it says capacity for Teton 1. I believe I understand that, but then it gets down to Laramie 1 and it says number 18. Obviously, it's not a capacity issue, or is it? And what does the 18 mean? Is that 18 out of a big list of projects that goes down to 332, or is it the first one up that they've already done the first 17 and 18 is the first one up? Could you explain that to me, please?
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Very good questions, and cuts right to the efforts of the committee during the interim. The answer to the President is no, we have not cut through all of the major maintenance projects. Mr. Chairman, there's approximately 30-some million dollars worth of major maintenance projects that have been identified and are sitting on a priority list. You will notice that your select committee came back to you and recommended the Lovell project that we alluded to and the project in Saratoga. Those were the two emergency projects in the bill. There are at least $30 million worth of other major maintenance projects that the select committee chose not to recommend to you. We set aside, you might remember, and for the newcomers to the body, you might know that we set aside $80 million out of the LSRA last March. And that's what we went forward with into the interim with the encouragement by the Appropriations Committee last year to conduct a complete review of that prioritized list and take a look at those buildings again. They did that. And so to answer the second question that the President posed, when you see the number 18 beside the facility in Cheyenne, in Laramie County, that particular building rests at number 18 on the priority list. But it is, Mr. Chairman, the hub of a strategic plan put together by this district to address subsequent projects, 5 or 6 of which are elementary schools that rest in the top 10 on the priority list. The reason that this district would like to take care of that junior high school, which ranks number 18, is that it would use that space as a swing space to be able to rebuild elementary schools in the neighborhoods in which they rest. Obviously, the district could go a different route and build green grade schools out between here and Pine Bluffs or between here and Chugwater, but this district has chosen to approach it this way. That's their long-term plan. The select committee and me personally have actually been on the ground and toured some of these facilities that I'm referring to. So I hope that helps. That is the reason why the junior high school is on the project list and has been prioritized. And I do want to say that the other issue facing Laramie County, Mr. Chairman, is a capacity problem as well. There are over 900 students in this district who are taking classes in modular buildings. So we do have a capacity issue here. We have a bigger capacity issue up in Jackson, up in Teton County, and thus that is why those are the two projects that appear in the bill. I hope that helps.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if I'm speaking out of order, but obviously have some concerns about the Standing Committee amendment. I don't know if I should sit down and wait for someone to kind of open the door to discuss why that was brought, but I'm happy to start talking about it.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, if we are ready, I'm very happy. I believe the Standing Committee amendment was moved by the chairman and read in. If not, I'd like to have it read in. It's read in.
It was read in.
And it might be appropriate for the Appropriations Chairman to address the Standing Committee amendment. Otherwise, I'm glad to do that.
Go ahead.
I will tell you that in the Appropriations Committee, there was much discussion, similar to what we're having out here on the floor, Mr. Chairman, and it was the determination by the Appropriations Committee, especially given the times, given the process we've gone through for the last 5 weeks, to pull the project that we just talked about, line 8 on page 6, the Laramie District 1 project, the junior high school, for $42 million. So that is the Standing Committee amendment. That was a 3-2 vote in the Appropriations Committee to pull that project.
Any questions on the Standing Committee amendment? I'm going to go with Senator Burns first. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, this was not an easy decision to make, but the fact is dollars are short. This project was enormously expensive, especially $80 million for a junior high school. Frankly, didn't make a lot of sense to a lot of members of the committee. In addition, I'm sorry, $40 million, my mistake. The other problem was the condition of the school is not that bad. The overriding issue supposedly had to do with capacity rather than condition. So and so the argument keeps getting made that there are students who are being taught in modulars as if they're not as if their learning is handicapped or something. The state is paying for the modulars. The modulars are perfectly good, and once the revenues of the state pick up, then I could very easily see this project being put back in line. But in the meantime, we don't know what's going to happen to state revenues. The good senator from Snake River Country specifically mentioned what's happened to the price of natural gas. The price of oil isn't much better at this time. This money, I think, is actually better used for major maintenance on all the buildings around the state.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in opposition to this Standing Committee amendment. You've heard a lot of discussion talked about this particular project, and rightfully so. Laramie County School District 1 has 44 modular classrooms at the elementary level, and you've heard that that's almost about 900 students being educated in modular buildings. 11 of the 20 schools listed on the 2016 Needs Index are Laramie 1 facilities. 9 of these are constrained sites, meaning that if any time we're going to address them, this is a critical part of that plan to have space where those kids can go while their schools are being worked on. This plan has been studied twice under something called the MCER, which stands for Most Cost-Effective Remedy Studies. Those were done in 2012 and again in 2016, and we've already spent $342,000 on those studies. Both of these studies supported the reordering of projects in Laramie County 1 to address this particular project. So we've expended significant money. Right now, you'll see on your in the bill, there's approximately $42 million to be expended for the project. If we push off funding for this project now, it's just going to continue to cause us increased financial considerations in the road, inflation and things like that. If we push this off for 5 years, inflation could add another $8 million to the price tag. I'm very sensitive to the fact that we've got significant budget concerns. But, Mr. Chairman, a lot of these districts are in or these schools are in districts that we represent, and we can tell you talking about having kids in modulars is not ideal by any long stretch. And if you flip to that previous page on page 5, you'll see a long list of modular leases that are all being paid for in Laramie 1. I think, you know, as dire as our state's financial situation is, it isn't that dire, and I'd urge you to defeat this amendment and allow Cary Junior High to proceed.
Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment. We can talk about school funding, or we can talk about economic development, which is why we're really here. The state needs revenues from other sources other than minerals. Laramie County is leading the way in this state for economic development. We are the only county that's growing. We are attracting businesses, and we are steadily moving the state forward. There's a number of reasons for that, one of which is the quality of our education here in Wyoming, which we will continue to keep at the highest levels, even with a shorter budget. But what's important is for those people moving into this community is that we actually have schools for their children to go to rather than modular trailers. As we've all experienced in the last month, the winds in Cheyenne are severe. Those 90-mile-an-hour winds while learning in a modular are not ideal. If you really want to be committed to economic development, as I know this body is, and as we have expended millions of dollars for economic development, that is part of that process of ensuring that Laramie County continues to be a leader for economic development. This is very important. It's very important to the future of Wyoming. It's very important to Laramie County. And it's very important to you. So I'd like for you to look at the issue much more globally than just dollars and cents on a chart of how many schools. I mean, the point has been made that Laramie County has 11 of the top 20 schools that need to be replaced. 11. And almost 1,000 of our students are in modulars and are going to continue to be there. That's just not acceptable. And it's not acceptable for the long-term solution for Wyoming's growth and for the students of Laramie County. On and against the amendment.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment, and let me make it clear that I will be declaring a conflict on this vote. I won't be voting for the amendment nor the bill, or at least I don't think I can vote for the bill because I have a direct financial benefit. I am the architect on that project, Cary Junior High. But let me tell you, back in 2005, when this project came up, you know, I applied for that project, and I didn't get it. I was second runner-up, I guess. But it's been that long that we've been looking at replacing this school. And at that time, it was only $24 million. It's $42 million today. That's 6% every year since then. And we're going to just now kick the can down the road again. We're looking. They've put almost $6 million in that site already, getting it prepared. When they did Oakey Blanchard, they did some wise things. Did the road development, put in sewers in the streets to make sure that this is where it's going to go. Then the issue came to the Select Committee on School Facilities, of which I sat on, and a lot of these questions came up again. There were senators and representatives that were questioning why should we do this, and the School Facilities Commission came in and with their recommendation said, this is what is needed for the long-term viability of the school system in Cheyenne, in Laramie 1. School District Laramie 1. But they wanted to make sure. So they commissioned another Mercer study to be done. And it came back and said, yes, we have to replace Cary. Yeah, you may say it's good enough. I say it's not. It's number 18 on the list. It's in the top 20. It's got to be replaced. But there are a handful of schools that are higher on the list. And the kingpin in doing this, the linchpin, is to replace that school so that those other 9 schools can eventually be built because they're on very constrained site, I can tell you. We tear the school down, and then we move them. So into a swing space. If we didn't have that swing space, what would we do? We would go out and build modulars or we'd do something to replace an entire school while we're building it. So it just doesn't make economic sense to add
another 5 years onto this thing at 4% escalations, another $8 million, I think, as my good colleague from Cheyenne mentioned. I won't be able to be voting on this thing, but this is something that we've discussed since 2005, and it needs to get done because this school district is putting on new students every year. We're growing, and it's just going to get worse. We just need to get it done so that we can move on. Thank you.
Senator Griscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. On and for the amendment. Friends, it's with a heavy heart. These are tough issues. This is what we faced a couple of years ago on the general education. And, you know, education is a two-pronged deal. All of us are getting really, really aware of that now. We've got the general part of the education that we know we're facing $800 million shortage on. The other half of it, we haven't even talked about this year. We totally ignored it. And that's the capital construction and the maintenance of our buildings. And we've spent billions of dollars on buildings. Not millions, billions. They're brand new buildings, and there's a lot of buildings that are older that need worked on. And when we came into this session, that account, as of this bill being spent, is at zero. It doesn't have a dime in it. We're doing the exact same thing that we've done on the other side of the school budget, is we're putting our wants ahead of our necessities, not our needs. We know right now there's $30 million. When I asked bluntly in committee, I came into this totally open-minded, didn't have a clue what was going on. I'm new on the committee. I bluntly asked staff, I said, what shape are we in and what do we have for projects? They said, oh, we've got $5 to $7 million out there right now that have to be funded. We know they're coming. And I said, where's the money come from? They said, we don't have a choice. This money has to come directly back out of some of these projects. I said, how much more is there going to be? They said, we're not sure. I said, how much on a normal year? $8, $9, $10 million? So we're doing the exact same thing we did on the other side of education, and I realize how tough it is to have kids going in modulars. They went for years in my district. We understand there's a whole bunch in the district I represent in. My daughter's taught one for the last number of years. Folks, a big part of the people in this state live in modulars. They're not the end of the world. We have a lot of mobile housing around the state. People live in it every day, and it's acceptable. It's not great. It's not the best. But we're here to be fiscally responsible, and our deal is this. You kick this can down the road, and we're going to come back next year, and we're going to have another one of these deficit deals sitting here that we can't afford a new roof on a school. Or we can't take care of something. We got a heating system that no longer works. We're not talking about whether they get educated. We're talking about whether the water freezes in the building. This is absolutely irresponsible to spend this account to zero and to go into it knowing that. For all of us to do that, it's really, really does not make sense. Let's take this, and I realize it costs more money down the road. Let's take it. Let's look at it when our revenues get a little better. When this list was funded and came about, the state had hundreds of millions of COVID bonus money flowing into this account. And we rebuilt lots of buildings. We did the right thing at the right time. Let's not do the wrong thing at the wrong time now and bankrupt this account and be back next year and figure out what we're going to rob to pay to fix our schools.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm against the amendment, and you know, in the interim, the Select Committee had over $220 million worth of wants on our list. This is not our list as the Select Committee. It was a robust list with a lot of other condition score schools, schools that needed components, schools that needed to be replaced, a tremendous number of capacity schools throughout the state. And the Select Committee trimmed it back to two schools that were critical, and they're both critical for capacity purposes. And I realize, Mr. Chairman, that on page 6, line 8, it says that this is the 18th priority in terms of condition score. But that's not the reason it's on the list. It is certainly a building that has a condition need. It's on the list because of the capacity solution that it represents for Laramie County School District 1. In fact, I have a school in my district which is higher on the condition score needs that we struck from the list, and I voted in favor of that strike because it's a want. It's a lousy condition school, but we're going to be just fine, Mr. Chairman. You know that as well as I do. We're going to make it a few years until we have more money. But we have a situation where we have sufficient capacity in our school district not to have all of our students out in modulars, not to be renting these modulars, not to be basically wasting funds and behaving in an inefficient and effective manner for our students. We have that ability. Laramie County School District 1 does not right now. They're over capacity in many of the elementary schools, and this approach is a solution that doesn't just affect Cary Junior High School students. It affects the entire structure of the school district and allows a reconfiguration of students in such a way that it goes a long ways towards addressing those needs. It almost solves them. For that reason, your select committee, Mr. Chairman, decided that this had to stay on the list. This was an essential piece. This was not a want. This was a need. And I would encourage the body to reject the amendment, stick with this. Nobody understands more than I do how short we are on funds moving forward when it comes to capital construction. But this is a project that's been underway for a number of years. When you delay it, when you stop it, you screw that process up. Those delays are costly. You end up having to redo some of the work, restructure what your outcome is. We're wasting money if we take this one off the list as a state. And I would say that that's fiscally irresponsible. We can't just look to the future and hope for more money. We have to look at what we've got now, do what's right for the students, and do what's fiscally responsible now. Keeping this on the list is fiscally responsible for the state of Wyoming.
Mr. President.
Go ahead. I'll yield to Senator Emmerich.
Senator Emmerich and then Senator Burns.
In the interest of time, I feel the best thing to take to heart are the statements of the good senator from Albany County. And I guess maybe I can stand here and apologize that we're doing so well and have such capacity needs in Laramie County. But I'm not going to do that on and against this amendment.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, as the good senator from Devil's Tower said, and the good senator who first gave the explanation, this has not been fun, and this has not been an easy thing to do. It has not been a good, a pleasant experience. But let's pull back and look at the big picture. School funding for capital construction. These schools have been funded for the past 10 or 12 years by coal lease bonus money. We've gotten billions of dollars from coal lease bonus money to build these schools. We haven't signed a lease in 2 years. There is no more money. We're talking about a finite resource now. So the idea that we can just go and build another school and the money's going to suddenly magically reappear is not the case. That's just not true. So we have to look at the resources we have. If I represented Laramie County, I'd probably be standing up and trying to defend it too. But the fact is, their capacity is an issue, but it is taken care of by modulars at the moment. Their condition is nothing compared to a number of other buildings and schools in the state. The number one worst condition school in the state this year and for the past 5 years has been Sheridan Alternative School. And its capacity on the index is more than twice, as of last year, it's more than twice the next school on the list. And I'll have the Appropriations Committee, have not tried to put that school forward for this because we see the condition of the account that we have. Now, if this amendment is defeated and that $42 million is put in for Cary Junior High, that is not going to take children out of the module buildings. As a matter of fact, it's probably going to put more children in the modular buildings for the next few years while the building's built. So the idea, and one last thing, the idea that that it's going to cost more as time goes on, well, that's true with every building on the list. So I think that's something we have to bear in mind. We wish we had the money for all the schools on the list. We just don't.
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some great discussion, and you all heard and mentioned what a tough issue this is. And there's a lot of tough issues we're going to have to deal with during this session and when we get to the budget session. Just a couple things to ponder, Mr. Chairman. And when you look at it globally, I believe we have 23 million square feet of schools in this state. And one of the mistakes we made, members of the Senate, back when we were broke before, and probably broke before that, and broke before that, because we've been broke many times, is we did not have money for the deferred maintenance. And I understand the need, and I haven't been to that school specifically. I have seen the ones in Jackson, and it's a whole different issue, and I'm supporting that one. But if we have $600 million worth of deferred maintenance anyway, and we have no money for deferred maintenance, and we have an opportunity where if we build this school, we don't even solve the capacity issue, as pointed out by my colleague from Sheridan County. It just makes good sense to me. This school will be built. It's just a matter of it's not now. And my colleague talked about it was on the drawing board in 2005. That was 12 years ago, and we spent $3.2 billion on schools. And I'm not sure the number in Laramie County, it's not important other than they have a lot of students. It was probably the highest of any of them. And we did a lot of good things for Laramie County School District 1, and we're all proud of that. But ladies and gentlemen, right now is to take the more conservative approach and put that money and look to the future. If we don't do anything, we come back to the budget session, we have $0 for major maintenance. And you're right, it might be a roof, it might be this, we have LISRA. We're already taking $80 million out of the LISRA account to do this. I would say let's just be cautious about this. Let's don't do this now. Let's look at the prioritization when we come back and see what the needs are, and talk and think seriously about the lack of major maintenance. I would ask you to support the amendment.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, you know, we heard this once before in 2005. When it came up, we needed the school then. They told us at the time, okay, we'll do it later on because we can't do it right now. And so here we are, 2017, and we're saying the same thing. The issue is we've got half a dozen schools that are in the top 10 on the list. Well, I don't know actually what the number is. There's a whole bunch of elementary schools above this school. And the plan is to be able to get this facility done. The design is virtually done. It's going to be done next month. And we're basically shovel ready. We're ready to put this thing out to bid. And to defer it to the next biennium, or to defer it two bienniums from now, I think is the most irresponsible thing to do. Because we are going to be growing, and those other schools, the reason why we have the issues with the 55% of the top 20 schools are in Laramie 1, and the reason why is we keep kicking these down the road, thinking that it's going to be better times. Well, I submit to you, you got to get her done now, and quit kicking it down the road.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to add one comment. You know, I've grown up in families that have grown up in mobile homes, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that living, and a lot of families make do with it. But I have a real problem when I'm looking at this bill, and we talk about the capacity at Teton, and they've got mobile units where their kids are learning right now. And the comment was made earlier that mobiles are fine, and that they're not ideal, but they're great. So my question is so we're willing to keep kicking the can, putting kids in Laramie 1 in modulars and telling them that's fine, but we're not willing to do that to our counterparts and some of the students in Teton 1. And I think that's the hardest thing that's the hardest part about this bill for me, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Even the senators from Laramie County understand that there is a scarcity of resources. So what that means is that you have to prioritize accordingly and put your money where it counts. And it counts in Laramie County. We are growing. We are going to continue to grow. We are an investment that's working. We have passed a number of bills this session that are risky, that are based on risk. We're a known quantity, which is growing. We are your future. We are the future. And there are promises that have been made about this school that have never been met. It's time to come true on those promises. Put it where it counts. Invest in Laramie County. Invest where it's needed. The school was built in 1953. It has no central air. There's no air conditioning. The second floor is 90 degrees. The rest of the kids are in modulars. Are they learning? Sure. Do you want your kids to go there? No. It's not acceptable. We need to put the money where it counts. We need to make the right decisions for Wyoming on and against the amendment.
Question. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 58, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Division being called. All those in favor, please stand.
Roll call vote.
All those opposed, please stand. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 58 has failed. Passed. sorry to panic everybody there. Back on the bill, Senator Landon. Yes. Vote was 18-4, 10 opposed. Would you like to move the Committee of the Whole amendment? Some one of you. No, would you?
House Bill 58, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 8, line 12.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 58. Mr. Chairman, this amendment was brought to me by LSO. It's merely a technical correction that was based upon the passage of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Any questions? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 58, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 58 has passed. Back on the bill, Senator Landon.
Quickly, thank you. I think you get some sense of the kind of interim work that we had and that we did and some of the conversations that went well into the evening on some of our meetings. This was a difficult thing here, and I appreciate everybody's professionalism and the great debate that we had. I would be happy to answer any other questions. Otherwise, I'd call for question on the bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 58, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion carries. Majority Floor Leader Perkins. You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries.
I'm going to the game tomorrow.
The reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had it in consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 11 engrossed, do pass. House Bill 15 engrossed, do pass. House Bill 62 engrossed, do pass. House Bill 130 engrossed, do pass, amended. House Bill 153, do pass. House Bill 186 engrossed, do pass. House Bill 235 engrossed, do pass. House Bill 266 engrossed, do pass. House Bill 280, do pass, amended. House Bill 253 engrossed, do pass. House Bill 58, do pass, amended. Senator Moniz, chairman.
Senator Moniz.
Committee of the Whole report.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. We have one quick concurrence vote on a joint conference committee report. Senator Baldwin, are you ready?
Yes, Mr. President, I'm ready.
Reading clerk, please read it in.
Joint Conference Committee number 1, referencing Senate file 62, Telepharmacy Amendments. Reference House Message number 350.
Senator Baldwin.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the adoption of Joint Conference Committee report on Senate file 62, reference message number 350. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, we went to this other group on the other side of the building, presented to them the mistake that they'd made in changing the language and exempting the pharmacies. We put our language back in from our committee and left one small piece of insignificant change that they put on, and I encourage you to vote aye on this change.
Further discussion, the motion is to adopt the Joint Conference Committee Report number 1, reference House Message number 350 to Senate File 62. You've been asked to vote aye to adopt. Chief Kirst will please call the roll.
Agar? Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Excused.
Co? Aye. Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Excused.
Excused. Emmerich?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 aye, 2 excused.
By your vote, you voted to adopt the Joint Conference Committee Report number 1 for Senate File 62, being House Message number 350. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, there's some enrolled acts, but I think everybody's anxious to get out of here. It's up to you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that we stand adjourned until 9 a.m. I went around and talked to the various chairman, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. President, and turns out that we do have some committee, a little bit of committee work going on in the budget bill to finalize that. Starts at 8. So 9 a.m. Monday, February the whatever day that is.
What? Announcements. Anybody have any announcements?
Yeah. Yes.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. We are starting at 9, but at 8 o'clock on Monday, February 27th, there is a presentation with Joint Travel in General Room L54. It's a presentation on Wyoming Wildlife Natural Resource Trust Fund.
Senator Burns.
Yes, Mr. President. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet at 8 a.m. on Monday morning down at the Appropriations Room to get a presentation on the entire budget bill. And I think that's when we'll be signing it.
Any other announcements?
Where are we at? $40 million on budget on cuts? $45 million or what?
$45 million.
$45 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. The senators need to pick up your photos. They're located in Senator Perkins. You know where they're located?
Yeah. You know, I had one job, didn't I?
Alan, I had one job. Yeah. that's too soon, Senator. You can pick up your legislative photo after session today at the receptionist's office adjacent to the Senate lobby. So it says, right out that way.
You've all heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. The Senate is adjourned until 9 a.m. Monday, February 27th, for the last week of this special general session.